with crude, which means every barrel you burn is even worse for the climate. Scientists have referred to it as the fuse to the largest carbon bomb.
For a different take on what's happening in the city, the nation, and our world.
The reality often inserts in these trumps kind of the perception the media is putting out, and then parading that kind of perception only deepens the resolve, I think, of many to fight back. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing.
Tune into The Morning Show, Monday through Fridays from 6 to 8 a.m.
What we're seeing is that there is wide-scale concern about the impact that both this, the revelations of surveillance that we know about, but also just the threat more generally is having on journalists and on their sources.
Only on WBAI 99.5 FM and online at WBAI.org. WBAI, your true community alternative.
This is Comrade Karl Marx, and when I'm visiting the 21st century, I listen to Arts Express with host Prairie Miller. You have nothing to lose but your chains. You have a world to win. Listeners of the world, unite!
That's every Thursday at 2 p.m., Arts Express with host Prairie Miller, where art meets politics. And if you're down with the status quo, take the local.
motion. Are you ready, ready for this? Are you ready for a shower devotion? Don't go drinking that dirty water. Don't go swimming in the bay today. Don't do nothing without looking first. Where's your coat when the sky is so gray? Are you ready, ready for this?
Anytime.
Are you ready for a shower devotion?
I'm ready.
Are you ready, ready for this?
Anytime.
Are you ready for a shower devotion?
Would you move?
Would you move?
Would you
move now?
Come on.
Just move in the spirit of emotion.
I
know you can. You're moving.
I'm
in it, I'm in the pleasure of the motion. Where's your cash and your credit cards? Are you ready,
ready,
ready for this?
Anytime.
Are you ready for a show of devotion?
I'm ready.
Are you ready,
ready,
ready for this?
Anytime.
Are you ready for a show of devotion?
Would you move?
Would you move?
Would you
move now?
Come on.
Just move on the spirit of the motion.
I
know you can.
You
move me.
You know.
I'm in the eye in the pleasure of the motion.
Yes, tonight on the Waiting for Mike Sargent program, it's the Shriek Back Songbook. We heard Mercy Dash just now, before that, a little bit ago. What did we hear? Under the Lights, circa 1982, I believe. Well, here's another hit. Well, is it a hit or a miss? Another tune of theirs that was so good, it was used in the movie Manhunter. It's titled For the Prehistoric Giant Fish Discovered Not Long Ago, Coelacanth. And I think it fits the Mike Sargent definition of music that takes you someplace else. Let's go underwater, shall we? Ah, hell, that wasn't it. Oh, come on, Mike, I'm all set up for the overnight, and you're dicking me around. I mean, pardon me, this is WBAI New York. Thank you.
Thank you. to hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
This is going to be just a little bit unpleasant. Don't move. Stay very still now.
Feels like times have changed.
Now, where are my people?
You're tuned to listen to sponsored radio.
WBAI 99.5 FM on your radio dial, and coming to you from where?
New York.
Thank you.
Well, we're in Brooklyn now.
Well,
it used to be at the edge of the city.
We've been all
over. Now we're in one of the boroughs.
We've been Midtown. I've been everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. We were Midtown. We were downtown. Now we're in Brooklyn. We were in Harlem for a while.
Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
By the way, did you hear about this story here? I have a lot to talk about, Joe. We have Life is Like Science Fiction. And we're going to, because you're white, Joe, and I'm black, we're going to talk about race relations in this country. We're going to talk about that, too.
And ivory.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
Anyway.
I didn't understand what that word was there. Doesn't matter what.
There you go.
All right, anyway. But I have a lot of Life is Like Science Fiction. And, you know, we're living in a really interesting time, Joe.
Don't say that. That's a Chinese curse.
What does that mean? Oh, may you live in interesting times. Yeah, well,
we're
put that curse on. We're there. We're in that curse.
They're coming and they're waiting for us Gaijing to...
Gaijing, what does that mean?
Just us American, the Gaijing.
Gaijing.
And I forget what
I'm not American.
No, I forget what the other term that they use for the African-American population.
Baijing.
Whatever. They're waiting for us to kill each other off so that they can come in and then fully take over America.
I like that.
Just like those...
That's a good concept.
Just like that island building that they're doing in the South Asia Sea. You've heard about that,
no,
yes.
What's an island building?
They've been building up islands.
What do you mean building up islands? You mean like that trash island?
No. Like, let's say they have a small atoll, right?
Atoll?
Yeah, like a small group of islands.
Yes.
They've been filling it in and manufacturing it to make a bigger island.
But manufacturing what? What are you?
They're bringing in more dirt, more pylons.
Bringing in more dirt from the mainland. Mainland dirt to create
a bigger island so they can create a military base on that island and thereby strategically take over the South China Sea, where all the Philippines and everything are in that area.
Interesting.
So, yes, there's been a big feud going on.
So they're building a bigger island,
and therefore they're claiming more by them taking these islands. They're now laying claim that they have sovereignty in the South China Sea.
This is China. Life is like science fiction.
There you go.
Why don't you read one of the headlines, Joe?
Thanks for leaving the lights on, by the way.
Well, you're older, Joe. You want to know? You want to feel old? Okay. Ready to feel old? Okay.
Okay.
I was looking for something. I wanted to show.
And you couldn't remember where it was.
No. Well, I was looking for something. I was looking for the 4400. I just finished watching Heroes Reborn.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, I always felt that Heroes, Tim Kring, had seen the 4400 and goes, oh, I could do this better, you know? And then he made Heroes. And the first season of Heroes to me is classic TV. It's just great. Well, that first season's great. Okay. Season two, there was a strike, so they tried to wrap it up. It got screwed. Season three, they tried to bring their mojo back. They couldn't do it. It was a rehash. Season four, the carnival. I don't know what they were thinking. But at this point, you were invested in the character, so you stayed with it, and then it was like...
Totally disappointed.
What? Okay. The only good thing was, like, I like that actor, Robert Knepper, who was from Prison Break. Anyway, so, Heroes Reborn, okay, they bring it back.
I know, so, I was watching some of it.
Well, I hadn't watched it, but I watched the whole thing, I binge-watched the entire thing, and the person I was watching it with, I wanted to show them the 4400. So I'm looking for the 4400. I have season, you know, I had all seasons, but I couldn't find season one. I had season two, season three, couldn't find season one. So I'm going through all my...
It's on Netflix now, by the way.
Yeah, I don't have Netflix. I am Netflix, okay? So I'm going through my DVDs, and I don't know, have you seen my apartment?
Not recently, but the last time I was there, it's probably mass.
It looks like, you know, Blockbuster. Okay, behind my DVDs, more DVDs.
For those who don't know what Blockbuster is, you're
But yeah, for those who don't know what Blockbuster is,
people used to go rent DVDs.
DVDs,
there was
physical
no
DVDs.
Streaming content.
There it is.
You had to go to some place to get your content.
That's right, and talk to people and interact with people, wait online, pay
fees.
Which
was good because, you know, at that point, then, like the library. You would get recommendations.
Well, it was a library for videos. Yes, that's what it was. It sure was. Listen, and they had sections. You could shop. It was like a record store.
They had sex in the sections.
Who had sex?
In the adult section, they had sex.
Do you mean that as a double entendre?
Maybe literally and figuratively.
I understand.
And that's how Quentin Tarantino got it started.
No, I know. I know.
He didn't go to film school.
His famous line is, "Did you go to film school?" He said, "No, I went to film." All right, so here's the deal. So as I'm looking, I come across older DVDs. Like, oh, I forgot I had that. So I pulled out Raw, okay? Eddie Murphy's Raw. Right. And I was like, wow, because I hadn't seen that in year, literally, since right. it, like, it came out. And I had the unopened DVD. And, yeah, it was... Dude.
I was there.
That came out 29 years ago.
Yeah, I was there.
29 years ago.
I was there.
I was fully formed 29 years ago.
I was at the Theater of Madison Square Garden.
Oh, you were there for the live?
Yes, I was there.
Real at the Felt Forum?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, right, the Felt Forum, before it was called the Theater at Madison
Square Garden. Theater of Madison Square Garden. The Felt Forum is done at the Felt Forum. And here's a couple of things. First of all, it's a different... Are you in the video? Like, are the shots of you?
A couple of times I thought I saw myself.
Okay, I wish I had more hair.
I didn't have the shine, so you couldn't as easily pick me out.
You didn't have the shine. Yeah. Okay. I had to put it on slow-mo. But anyway, here's what I'm going to say. First of all, it was a different time. You know, people cheer when he says Bill Cosby.
Yes.
He's talking about Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson was still alive.
Jackson was still alive. Other people.
Was he still black then? Or was
he was black. He was Michael Jackson.
It was around Thriller.
It was after Thriller. It was 87.
Okay.
87.
Thriller was like 86,
a different world.
85?
87. So... In the beginning, I don't know if you remember, the beginning there's a whole thing where you see like young Eddie doing some joke. And the family sitting on the couch, okay, who have really no dialogue, is like, I love that kid. That's like the big dialogue. Do you want to know who the uncle on the couch was who goes, I love that kid?
Who?
Samuel L. Jackson.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
How could he be an uncle back then?
He was, you know, this is 29 years ago. He was a skinny nothing.
But was he old enough to be somebody's uncle?
You know, he's in his 60s now, so he was probably like his early 30s.
Okay, so it could happen.
So, yeah. But it was surreal.
And I saw, there used to be a place out in Long Island called Governor's Comedy Club. And I was there on Saturday night.
Governor's Comedy Club.
And
where was this?
It was out on Long Island. Around Huntington.
Okay.
And one of the comedians that night on the bill was Irish Eddie Murphy.
One of the comedians on the bill was Irish Eddie Murphy.
And of course, he comes out and he's like, you were expecting a white dude, weren't you?
Okay, and it wasn't.
And he was like,
it was really Eddie Murphy.
Yes, and it was. And he was like, and he did his shtick and he said, but you don't have to pay to see me anymore because next week you can see me on Saturday Night Live. And everybody was like, yeah, right, sure enough. And there he was the following week for the premiere Saturday Night.
Why Irish? Where's the Irish?
It was a spoof. That was the whole thing.
Irish Eddie Murphy.
Because he didn't have, like, a picture up. kind of thing. Gotcha. It was just like they would just have like, you know, and then his listeners.
Joe, get closer to the mic there, babe.
And then his thing, I should get like a thing to wear. Remember the old days?
Just tilt it up.
The thing and they wore
listen,
it like
I
this?
Did, listen, I did that until I talked Tony into getting this. Yeah. That's what I did. I held it in my hand.
Yeah, there you go.
There it is. It's like, I'll be here all week.
Try the veal.
There it is. It's exactly.
There you go.
It's a lot better.
So that was his thing. He was Irish Eddie Murphy. And next week, you'll see me. You don't have to pay to see me. I'll be on Saturday.
And this is before he was on Saturday Night Live.
Before. It was the weekend before. It was in August. So, September.
Ah, September.
So this was just before.
See, I never really watched Saturday Night Live back then. I heard about it. Everybody was raving about it. But I'd already stopped watching TV.
We used to go to my lady's pub, which was a little hole in the door.
My lady's pubs?
Pub,
okay.
Which was a little hole-in-the-wall place in Maastricht. And me and the folks, because we were old enough to drink there.
Who's the folks?
Guys I knew, hung out, played music with.
Did you really call yourselves folks?
The folks, yes, because...
Because this is the 1880s.
No, the cops didn't even bother us. They would chase all the kids away from the park on the grandstand. Mm-hmm. But we always would come, have some beers, play our musical instruments, sing... You know, have a good time. 10 o'clock, we'd head out, and we'd always clean up after ourselves. So we never got hassled by the cops. You know what I mean?
I do.
So, and then we would go to my lady's pub, and we would like watch Saturday Night Live there. And that's when you used to get. Remember the little Pilsner glasses?
No.
The little. They were like this big, like my fingers width between my thumb and my index finger. 25 cents.
Wait, the little what? You said what?
They had the little Pilsner glasses.
Like pills thing. In a glass.
Pilsner.
Oh, Pilsner. Glass. Pilsner. I thought you were saying pills in a glass. I'm like, I didn't do that, Joe.
What? Pills in a glass? What
I didn't do
glass?
That, Joe.
Anyway, that was 25 cents. A mug was 50 cents. And then a pint glass was a dollar. Back in the day. And the guy's name was Stan. He had a see your face at the door and he would buzz you in. He had a nose that looked like a group of bees just had a field day on it.
A nose that looked like a
It was like cratered like the moon. And
damn,
and he would take your beer, he would put it down, and he would do like this quick switch, and he would do this. He'd do this like point kind of thing.
Damn.
So those were the days. So, you know, we had the shuffle pool, the shuffle bowling. You know, you had to put the
shuffle bowling. Yeah. What is that? What do you like?
No.
Go. You shuffle up to the thing and then throw the ball like
an
old man.
You had to push it like shuffleboard, but it had the bowling pins at the end. And
no, what on earth are you talking?
Those are old games.
These are old games for old men. What kind of guy were you when you was a young man? You called yourself folks and you played shuffleboard?
Cheap beer, watching
cheap beer, playing shuffle bowling.
Singing in the park.
Singing in it. Are there any videos of this?
No.
I want videos of Joe singing in the park.
You know, and well,
with his gang, the old folks.
Because you talk about a day when the cops were still the good guys.
Well, you know, that's a thing. It's not that cops are no longer good guys. It's that there's a strong culture within the cops in terms of the kind of people they've allowed to come in. I mean, you know, it's a job that attracts a certain kind of person, okay? Sure, it'll attract the do-gooder, but it also attracts that person who just likes to have guns and power and be abusive and bullies.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
I
showed
and,
you the
and
one
bullies
thing,
shouldn't be able to get in.
And I showed you that one thing that one of my friends who went to my alma mater posted about him seeing someone he grew up with. And then of all the guys he knew growing up, this guy was the least likely candidate to be a cop, and he just, like, it freaked him out because he knew growing up with this guy what he was like. So.
Well, we're going to get deeper into this.
Going deeper?
We're going to go deeper into this. I have an article that Abigail Disney posted on her Facebook page. And,
no relation to the Disney.
Yeah, it's relation to the Disney. But,
wow.
But, you know, we became Facebook friends after I interviewed her for a documentary that she did. And it's an interesting, it's an article, we'll get to it, Joe, but it's there, and it's just that we're living in interesting times. I mean, I can share things from my past, but even watching the Eddie Murphy movie, you know, and you see a huge portion of his audience was white, mm-hmm. and he addresses race head on, you know, throughout, you know, he makes fun of black. He makes fun of white. He makes fun of black-white relations. He makes fun of, you know, and in the article that I'm going to read a little bit to you, it
but
talks
that's
about
when we could still laugh.
Well, that's just the importance of dialogue.
Yes,
you know, the importance of, you know, we live in a culture now where there's so much information out there, but you don't have to open your mind to anything.
Well, you know,
you could consistently absorb the same kind of stuff over and over, and there's tons of it.
I think I've said kiddingly in the past, but you know, I think one of the things that unites us all is music, and one cannot dispute the contribution
and laughter.
Well, and laughter, but one cannot dispute the contributions by the African American community to music. And
how about to culture in general, to America?
Overall.
America.
But I'm just saying, I go on many occasions to Brooklyn Bowl because it's a great venue to see great bands. Like, I've seen Aaron Neville there. I've seen the New Orleans Preservation Hall Jazz Band there. And when I've been there with friends, I look around and I have said to my African-American friends, Where are the black people? Because the only people of color that are there, they're working.
That are where?
At the venue.
Which venue?
Brooklyn Bowl.
And but why would the black people be there?
Because it's the New Orleans Preservation Hall.
Hey,
jazz
band. Babe.
It's,
I saw. Listen to me. Jazz.
It's Aaron Neville.
Listen to me. Jazz at Jazz at the Apollo. Right.
Yeah.
Saw an ad for it in the winter. Jazz at the Apollo. It's got six artists smiling. Jazz at the Apollo. All white.
Well, the gentrification of the neighborhood up there.
Well, I'm just saying though.
I know.
It's I mean, you know. And you know, it's interesting. This article is really it's written by a white man talking about what can, you know, someone who's white, who cares, do. Like, what if you want to be an ally to enforce change? What can you do? And that's what the article's about. And it's really fascinating. It's really interesting.
I'm your friend.
I think Chris is trying to see. Let's see if we can. He's trying to.
Better your phone than mine.
He's trying to contact us
from the beyond.
He's trying to contact. I don't know if he's listening to.
We're channeling you, Chris Taylor.
I don't know if this.
Chris Taylor, if you're listening to us.
I don't know if he's listening.
We're Skyping, Chris Taylor.
All right. See, now this phone. This.
Chris Taylor, we're Skyping. Can you hear us, Chris?
We're not Skyping.
We could Skype.
We.
Chris Taylor, look in your backyard. There are snipes. I didn't say Skypes. There are snipes in your backyard, Chris Taylor.
All right, well, you see, this thing would have to go to the other computer, and it's not doing that. But you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is commercial-free radio. It's radio for the community, by the community. There are no ads. There's no corporate sensibility.
That's for sure.
So we can't bring in Chris yet, but we will try. But Joe, you've got a few stories that I think just will start us out. Look, I found. The other computer finally came up.
It came up.
Yeah, but you do keep. Am I up? Read a story. For
I can't
me,
hear myself.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. You're fine.
Okay. I thought you were doing like you do to Chris. You bought me down.
Your headphones are right there.
It's very sweaty. It's sweaty in it. With the air conditioning.
You're a sweaty guy. You can open the door slightly.
I can open my crack slightly. What?
You know.
You're a stupid man. Yeah, I've been there, done that. I don't know. What story do you feel like me starting with?
What story do I feel like you starting with?
Yes. There's just so many. So many stories.
How about the dog story? Because last week we did a whole thing on exorcisms.
Why did you do a whole thing on exorcisms last week?
Well, because, you know, you mean when you weren't here? Okay. The whole thing, because there's this amazing
I was here for 40 minutes.
Oh, no, all right. The week before.
Off air.
The week before. Okay. Week before, I did a whole thing on exorcism because, you know, there's a fascinating story about this psychiatrist.
Yes.
Who had been called in like 25 years ago.
Yes.
By one of the biggest, exorcists or whatever. And he was, you know, to see whether these people were actually possessed or what actual psychological problem was.
Like, it wasn't because most of these people,
whatever it was, right? And that he was there to diagnose it. And he said, largely a lot of them were. He says, but then there were some cases that it was 1%, no 2% other.
That he
no, not even 1%, 2%, more like 15%.
Wow.
And he said, and after doing this for 25 years, he is absolutely convinced that. And he says, and he knows most of his colleagues, and he's like a Harvard, graduate of all the top schools. He's a professor, blah, 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 blah. But it was a really fascinating story. So I started covering various,
exorcisms.
Well, just exorcist stories. And there's more and more of them recently, which is interesting, considering everything that's going on.
Before I read the story, I will just tell you this.
Yes. Talk to me.
So, you know in physics?
Yes.
How?
I know nothing.
There is the difference between the observed and the unobserved universe.
Yes.
And how?
Why? Yes, I do.
So that at times when we observe the subatomic universe, it behaves in one way, but when we look at the results afterwards, you know, the signatures by the computers and stuff, that the universe behaves in a different way. I actually believe that this is because the brain, more and more they talk about these days as being a processor, what are we calling it? What's the new processor again? I'm having a brain fart. Mine isn't actually up to date with the 22nd century here. But, you know, the new computers that they're talking about?
I know nothing.
All right. Anyway, I think that if a certain percentage of the population believes in something to a certain extent, that therefore their brains are processing this information, putting it out there into the universe, and therefore to some degree it is so.
Run it by me again.
If our brains are a processor shaping our reality, if enough people on the planet believe in something, then their beliefs make certain things so, to a certain percentage. They offer that unexplained.
Let me take this in for a second.
What are you taking in?
What you're saying.
Okay.
That if
the brain is a micro, if the brain is a process, a subatomic processor.
If the brain is a subatomic processor.
Like they're talking about those computers that they're trying to build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quantum computers.
Yes.
So if the brain is a quantum computer, and therefore part of what it processes shapes reality.
Yeah.
Therefore, if enough people in the world believe something,
yes,
there is a certain percentage of reality that is influenced by that processing of the conscious and the subconscious minds on the planet.
I don't know what you're saying.
I don't know what the hell you're saying, Joe, but what are you trying to say? What's the big picture here?
That
if enough people believe that
something.
Jesus was white, he's white. If
no,
enough people believe
that's different.
He was black,
if
Santa Claus has a white beard,
no,
he will come?
I believe that. Let's say there was a meteorite that was about to hit Earth, and let's say 80% of the world's population got out there and started to pray for a miracle.
Yes.
And there was...
All right, well, the clear. Look, there are all kinds of groups that get together and believe in the power of prayer and the power of positive thought and then the change in the world. And they're all... This has been going on for a long time.
Right.
So what's your point?
But my point is that their lives have never been on the line. So what I'm saying is that...
Okay. Well, you're going to love this article I talk about tonight.
I'm just saying.
What is that?
That if the brain operates
if
as a quantum computer, like a quantum...
Operates... is a quantum computer.
You don't have to wrap it.
I was going to wrap it, Joe.
No, that's okay.
If the brain. Yeah, the brain. Is Chris there?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
All right, go ahead.
That's scary.
So go ahead. Joe's giving us his concept. The brain is a quantum computer.
If at some point in time.
Yes.
Science deems that the brain operates like a quantum computer.
Yes.
And therefore, there is the difference between the observed and the unobserved universe.
A difference between the observed and the unobserved difference of universe.
Yeah, right.
What about the observed and the unobserved life?
That
could live your life in total ignorance.
Exactly.
And think everything's okay.
Right.
You know, one of the things the article talks about, by the way. All right, go ahead. I want to
interrupt. Let's just say at some point in time, there was a catastrophic event that was to befall us, and we had enough notice.
You mean like Trump running for president?
It could be. And the entire world was singularly focused and unified.
On making somebody disappear. Could we do it?
Or,
if the entire world tried to make, like, Chris disappear, would he vanish?
Well, that's like if all the Chinese in China jumped up at the same time, would it cause a
shift?
A tsunami that would destroy
if
America.
All the Chinese in
China jumped at the same time.
If all the Chinese in China.
There you go. But so going back to where we started on this long journey. So therefore, if this psychologist had 15% of the cases that he could not turn around and quantify, other than for the single fact.
Yes.
Then, could that not in fact be due to the beliefs of the, of those people surrounding that person, bringing this in somebody's possession?
Okay, but here's the question. Here's the question. Okay, if you're really going to go with that,
yes.
Okay, what is it that they're believing? And are they believing in a universe and an existence?
Well, I'll put that.
Are they putting that into, like, if you believe in the devil, does he self-create because you believe in him?
Don't take that one step further.
Okay. How are you going to go further than that, Joe?
Therefore, God only exists because of our belief in him.
But what about the unobserved? What about the
that is the unobserved.
Exactly.
That is the unobserved.
That is the unobserved. Yeah, but what if we're being observed by the unobserved?
That's another story altogether.
That's another story.
Bring the ship closer.
That's all about consciousness outside our dimension.
On the subatomic level.
No, who's to say?
I don't know. It's unobserved. I can't see it.
Right. So it could be, you know, we could be like in Men in Black. We could be that universe inside that little ball.
We could be the blackened men. Okay, let's
see. The dark matter. You know there's a study going on now, right?
Of course. About dark matter? Of
yes.
Course. Yes, of course. You think I haven't covered it when you're not here?
What? Well, there's a whole thing going on the internet with Honolulu and Nevada.
What about it? Honolulu
and
Nevada.
They're trying to find out how dark matter figures into the creation of our planet.
Yes. No. I have that story here today. It's the fifth dimension. That's the fifth dimension.
That's where Chris Taylor calls us from.
The fifth dimension.
It's called Buffalo, New York.
The fifth
dimension. Not to be confused with the musical group.
Yeah, well, that's...
That's the fifth dimension with our dimension.
That's the age of Aquarius.
And the moon is in the seventh house. I'm waiting for the probe to show up here.
Why? Do you feel a need to be probed?
No, Joe? Because we send out all these probes. Like, they were just talking about the probe to Jupiter and stuff.
Bring the probe closer.
I'm waiting for the alien probe to show up here. For that eye in the sky.
How do you know the alien probe isn't here? How do you know the alien probe isn't Trump testing us?
I used to say, you're not the alien probe.
You know, Mike, you should read that article with all the people that were going to the insane asylum trying to... Because of Trump, you know.
Ah, hello.
Gee, you sound different via Skype, Chris.
How do I sound?
You sound more intelligent than you usually do.
I sound more
intelligent. You sound scholarly.
Really?
I don't know what that is. So, are you wearing your glasses at home and sipping a cup of cognac and smoking a cigar?
Why does God need a starship?
God doesn't need a starship.
Well, that's good delivery. That's different than Shatner.
There you go.
Ah, hello. Get deeper.
All right, Joe, you ready with your story?
Yes, I am ready with my story. Good thing it's not two pages. We're saving paper.
Well, I just you get the highlights.
But I got to say, Joe,
yes.
What you're talking about is right on the money.
Thank you. I like to have
no, really,
I miss
Mike,
you because no. Mike doesn't massage my ego as much as you do.
No, how do we really know what existence
what if God
we really are? How do you know you
us?
Are who you are?
So,
there's no way to even prove you are who you are, even.
Well, that's another whole story.
Isn't that a Harrison Ford movie?
What?
I don't know, regarding Henry.
Maybe.
No, I mean, on a real serious point, like, nobody can... You can't prove you are who you are. I mean, other than that
I have ID. I have ID.
I think, therefore, I am. So.
You know, I mean, at the rate we're going now, I mean, you know, are we all living in the Matrix? Is it just the Matrix? And then the decisions that everyone makes changes the parallel universes to where we're traveling.
Well, you
because,
know,
like if Trump became president, that's one parallel universe. If Hillary Clinton becomes president, that's another.
That's if Trump becomes president, that's really the end of days.
The dolphins are going to be like, so long and thanks for the fish.
Exactly.
So,
but you know, anything at the rate we're going, I mean, but the most bizarre thing to me is that somebody was killed with a robot.
The bomb robot.
Violating.
See, here's the thing. Here's the thing about the bomb robot. The bomb robot, yeah, violated human rights. What human rights?
No, and Asimov's principle of robotics,
exactly,
number one.
Exactly, the first principle of robotics.
He's and rolling over in his grave.
Here's the interesting thing about that. It's like, until that happened, did you know the police had bomb robots?
No, I did not.
Nobody knew.
No.
Nobody knew until they used it.
I was like, wait, they flew in a drone and blew.
Have bomb robots. It's like one of those series on a sci-fi channel.
All I kept thinking is Wally was rolling up going... Went,
exactly.
He did that.
No, but did he have? I mean, did the robot actually get blown up, or
yeah,
did it have more
of course,
than
it's a suicide robot.
What? No, how do you really know? We don't know.
Oh my God, it's a jihadi robot.
The jihadi robots.
No, what happens if it had multiple bombs? How would they be assured that?
How would
one
they be
bomb
deployed?
Would do the trick?
How many bombs do you need to kill a person?
That's true.
Well, you know, they
got a significant bomb.
I don't think,
if he's not dead, then you know what? He ain't shooting you anymore.
You know what? But I had a conversation with a friend about this, and I said, you've got a robot, okay? It's that close to a guy where it can detonate and whatever. At that point...
Yeah, then you negotiate.
No, not about
right,
negotiating.
Now, there's a robot behind
at
you.
This
going
point,
to explode.
At this point...
Do you give up? No?
They don't know what else is going on, because they talked about multiple shooters and stuff. So right now, from an intelligence point of view, this guy is more of a valuable asset alive than he is dead.
First of all, you want to know something about the multiple shooters? Okay.
But why?
This is an open carry state.
Right.
Okay. They ran that. It's Texas. That's my point. So there were tons of people out there with guns.
There were dogs carrying guns.
People walking around with guns. They don't know who the shooter is.
Exactly.
It's confusion. It's utter confusion.
But here's my point.
Chaos.
This guy's an asset. If you have a robot that can detonate, it would seem to me that why doesn't it also have other modus operandi such as tasers, gas, and something else? Because if you have this situation,
first of all, why?
Because
okay. Why? You know why?
From an
because
intelligence point of view,
it's not
he's
an intelligence
an
point of view. It's from a point of view of like, okay, you're caring about human life. This is not about human life.
I'm
this
not
is
caring
not,
about
not,
human life. I said to this, the person I had this conversation with, this guy's an asset. There's an unfolding.
What guy's an asset?
The guy that they have cornered. Okay,
he's not an asset.
He is.
He's a liability.
He's an intelligence asset.
He's not an intelligence.
Oh please,
asset.
You don't.
The
know.
Police don't operate like that, Joe. What are you kidding?
But that's again. Even if they took the point of view of rethinking the situation like that,
rethinking.
What
are you
we
adding
talk
these
about,
words to?
No, we're talking about police training.
Oh my God! Now you just did that. You can't just throw a term like that out. That's opening up a whole can of worms. That's why we are where we are.
But apply. Look at this. These two situations in contrast of each other.
Give me one situation.
If we had the Boston bombing situation, right, and we had this robot in that situation, and we cornered both of these suspects,
what had the robot in that situation?
We didn't. But in future situations, if we had something like that, and the only
the bomb robot,
right? And the
are we talking about applications for the bomb robot?
Yes. And if the only application that has is to blow up, think of all the information that they were able to develop.
This is a nullify the threat device.
Yeah, but then it depends on the threat. If you got a bank robber robbing a bank and he's got hostages,
Okay, but those are not police being shot. Okay, police being shot takes another level for the police.
But I'm just saying, how do you know that there wasn't a whole bigger thing and blah, 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 and the clock is ticking and you don't know what's going on?
Joe, I'm not saying they should have used a bomb robot. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that even no matter how you look at it,
but they used the
it
bomb
was stupidity
robot.
On their part.
Stupidity to use a bomb robot?
Yes.
He's dead.
You lost the value. Time is ticking.
What asset? He's a liability.
He's not a liability.
He is. He's shooting cops.
He's an intelligence asset.
He's intelligence for who? He's not intelligent or he wouldn't be shooting the cops.
For the police.
What?
For the police and for the
They don't care about that. Are you kidding? This is not the mentality of the police, sir.
You can't even be that way in the future. You can't think like that.
We are in the future, Joe. Joe, it's the 21st century. It's 2016. You talk about 2016 when you were a teenager. It's the future. We're in the future. 2001 was the future. 2010 was the future. We're in the future. This is it. We have bomb robots.
The robot had a
We have police, you know, killing innocent black people in the streets. Over 100 so far.
I'm not debating that.
This is the future.
But
we're in it.
Things need to change.
Well...
I'm going to read from that
article.
Smart.
I'm going to read from that article. I'm going to get into that, but I want you to give the dog exorcism.
The dog exorcism.
Please talk to me.
Now, I think what
this is
I think
the
what,
ultimate privilege.
This is I think what
when
null
you have
and
money,
voids,
when you got money,
what voids this from being anywhere.
I want to send my cat.
Practical.
There. My cat needs
is it. Is that the word exorcisms and luxury pet spa.
There it is. Exorcisms and the luxury. Please talk to me, Joe.
Drive demons out of your pooch.
Excellent.
And it should say as well as poo too.
They need stop. They need one for cats because I have an evil cat. Go ahead.
Well, she needs a peace psychiatrist.
Please, you don't live
she
with her.
She needs a therapist.
Go ahead.
For owners worried about their pup's spiritual health. I thought most dogs were either
I'm always worried about Poochie's spiritual health.
I thought they were all Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons.
Stop.
So.
Dogs don't believe in that.
Hereafter?
The canine
you
Jesus.
You never saw that movie, All
the
Dogs
canine
Go to Heaven?
Jesus. What?
All dogs go to heaven.
They do.
So.
Go ahead, please.
There you go.
This is why the evil dogs.
Bomb robot, by the way.
I've seen some.
Danny sent a picture of the bomb robot. Send it to me. I want to post it on Night Shift.
I did. I just sent it to you.
A picture of the bomb robot?
Looks like Furby.
Stop. Danny did not send this.
It looks like Chappie.
Danny did not send this.
Looks like Chappie?
You're lying.
It doesn't look like Wally?
Wow. This is it, the bomb robot.
No, it looks like Wally.
Hello, you're going to die. All right, go ahead, please. I want to hear about the dog.
It's like a Cheech and Chong bit. Knock, knock. Who is it? Bomb robot.
Sorry, that is funny. It is funny. No, the whole concept of the thing is all I see is a little ball being dropped by the ghost. Bye bye. And
do you remember? You remember Dr. Gold something in the Bikini Bomb?
Dr. Gold Farm and the
Bikini Bomb.
I prefer Bikini Bomb.
That's what that is without the bikini.
What were the Bikini Bombs anyway? I never saw the movie. It's Vincent Price.
Right. He had these androids. They wore these trench coats. They would walk in and they would say to somebody, "Are you so and so?"
I like the idea.
Yes, I am.
Being,
and then they would take off
I
their
like
trench
an
coat.
Android. I like a and, robot walking in.
And
I
they
like
would have
that.
These gold bikinis on. And the whole idea is you had the robots tried to get the person to kiss them so that this way the kiss was the trigger to detonate.
Explosive.
Yes.
Well, there it is.
And it
was the 60s, right?
Yes. It was Vincent Price and Peter Lorre were both in it.
Peter Lorre.
In the first right. one.
So please, can
you
get back to the door?
Just make one comment about
what's that?
How surreal. You know, the fact that it was happening, and then you go on to talk about the possessed dog. What was bizarre to me is they were taking the police to Parkland Hospital. It was just going down in Dallas. Everybody was like, to me, was shooting with, there was all this footage of handheld, everybody with their phones. It seemed like everybody was being the Zarputa film. I mean, it was just, was like the whole thing just seemed so surreal to me.
Thank God they were reaching for their phones and not for their sidearms.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, just, it was just really bizarre. Like, it was just, besides the whole event being bizarre, but just.
And downtown Texas, if downtown Dallas, if you've never been, it's like downtown LA. At 5 o'clock, they roll back the sidewalks and it becomes a ghost town. And then the second thing is that downtown Dallas is still filled with a lot of the people who were relocated from Katrina. It's like there's a whole, like, you walk out there and...
No Larry Hagman?
No. around the perimeters of the downtown area where the trains come in and stuff, you have all these disenfranchised people who are still wandering around aimlessly dealing with, you know, the relocations from Katrina. And you
read about the guy, you saw the guy on CNN, the former police captain who said black people are more, you know, more, what was the phrase he used? They're more, I'm going to read you the exact phrase.
Okay.
They're more prone to crime or something like that. He had something really outrageous to say. But go ahead with the dog. I'll get to it, Joe.
Okay.
Oh, here it is. Ex-cop claims black people are prone to criminality. He went on TV, went on CNN, said this.
Any culture.
Okay. Former NYPD detective. This was earlier today.
He said
black Americans are prone to criminality and activists should stop claiming that blacks were being picked on by law enforcement.
Let me just say something to you.
Let me sink in.
What I say to him? This.
Yeah. Well,
he needs to go out and rent.
Listen, I'm going to read this article.
Wait. He needs to go and rent Johnny Knoxville's The Wild and Wicked Whites of West Virginia. Okay.
He needs to read Ta-Nehisi Coates.
It's poverty. Any group of people who are put into a situation where they become impoverished because their way of life is threatened, their jobs are taken away, they are not re-educated, they fall into the system.
Re-educated?
Well, not re-educated, but, you know, trained. Like if the coal mining industry changes and it becomes all machine, and now all of a sudden all these coal miners are out of work, or all these factory workers are out of work. You know, and you don't, and this is where the Republicans fail greatly in undercutting the social program.
This is where?
Among the cornerstones of what is happening in America, by not making education available.
Listen, let me just say this, okay?
Look,
that's
it's one
tip
thing
of the
to
iceberg
all, I know,
from
but
where
if
I'm sitting.
But that's it's a start. How do you feed
we
give
will
a
get
man
to
a
that.
Fish,
well, I'm gonna get to that article.
Feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. Okay?
Listen.
There is no...
I agree with the disparity, but it goes deep and it goes
long.
It
does, but there's no... You have to start somewhere. You can't keep saying...
That's why I'm
going
to get to this article. I'm just going to get to this article. So, tell me about the dogs.
So, Chris Taylor was arrested in Buffalo for molesting poodles. He was shaving them and trying to resell them as sheep.
Exactly.
No. It's very skinny sheep. They were waif sheep.
Will you go ahead with the story?
You like that, don't
I
you?
I did like that. I'm picturing the little dog.
Chris Taylor's waif sheep.
And he paints the faces
farm.
Black.
So that, no, he puts mascara on them so it looks like they're
so
black
they
around
like
the
they're
eyes.
Black around the eyes
so
like sheep.
There you go. Well, it's like the waif models on the runway. These are specially bred sheep. And anyway. A
he's
dog
a sheep pimp.
What? He's a sheep pimp. He's a poodle pimp.
He's a poodle pimp.
Which he disguises him as sheep. So there you go. This doesn't look like a sheep.
That's just bizarre.
Just bow.
Go ahead.
Bah, damn you, bah.
Will you please? Just do
it. He stands there with that little. You don't like the half of the cow.
You know what I'm thinking of, Mike? When Joe was talking about his head shining at you know at the Eddie Murphy Raw. That's I'm just thinking of Joe when he said I have more hair. It's just so bizarre to me.
Exactly. I can't picture Joe with hair.
We are
all right, Joe. Will you go, please?
I'm sorry.
Please.
I've been distracted. So a dog spa which gives pampering sessions to your to your pet has unveiled its latest offering. Oh, some of this is cut off. Pup exorcisms. Among high-end gourmet...
Pup exorcisms.
Yes, among high-end gourmet meals, bath, overnight stays, the dog
gourmet
spa...
Meal, you can get like a dessert after your
D-plus Krishima.
Now, why would a demon possess an animal? I guess like a Cujo thing. All right, go ahead.
That's different. That's rabies.
Your dog's not possessed. Maybe he has rabies. Unfortunately, your husband is possessed.
Plans to help settle pooches who may be struggling with possessions.
Yeah.
Oh, Figures. It's a Japanese spa.
Of course.
Because they got all those Kirins, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, they're drinking a Kirin as they judge your dog. He's clearly
Didn't you ever see the Kirin Warrior movie?
That'll be $1,500.
Didn't you ever see the Kirin Warrior movie?
The Kirin Warrior?
Yeah.
He fought for the right to make beer.
No, it's his whole thing. What are the spirits called in Japanese?
Sake.
No, the spirits and stuff. Anyway, so this guy who was a Kirin Warrior, which kids can only see the spirits, and this kid gets involved, and this guy was a former warrior. He's sitting there, and all of a sudden this refrigerator shows up with Kirin beer, isn't it?
This is a commercial?
No, this is a movie. It's a Takashi Miike movie.
Okay, okay.
And so at one point the guy starts drinking, and as he gets drunk, he can see the spirits. But he's drinking Kirin beer. So there you go.
As he gets drunk, he can see the
spirits. Yes.
All right, well, after the dog, you have to go to the guy giving the gun lesson.
There you go. So, anyway, the Japanese spa in Kagoshina, prefecture lists it's a Shinto priest. So it's not really even a Catholic priest. So it's a Shinto priest among its attendants, ready to help pets beset by evil spirits. They have irregular bowel movements. That's one of the very first signs of possession. Your dog have spirit possession.
Evil spirits.
He's poop. He's no
bowel movement.
He's poop. No regular.
Hey, shut up, Jameer. You know they're gonna come get you. Go ahead.
He's a ishishiri.
That was a freak.
Exactly. And he goes, oh, it's a shih tzu.
Oh, shih tzu not regular.
Stop. It's too...
That was like...
It's a shih tzu.
Like a guy running the pig road.
Shih tzu not regular.
Shih tzu no...
Shut up. You're a stupid man.
Yes, but you're laughing. There you are.
I'm crying. There you go. Crying on the inside.
Open his posse.
There you go. The pet dog exorcism plan listed on the spa's website.
Pet dog exorcism plan
is suggested for dogs in their
Padep.
What is that? Something health years. There's something unlucky health years? Reports the Toronto Sun. What's a dog's unhealthy dog years? Unlucky dog years. I have no idea.
Unlucky dog years.
I don't know.
13th year.
7-year-old to 10-year-old and 13 year. So 7, 10, and 13. It's an unlucky number.
That's the...
we need Schoolhouse Rock.
The dog is going through the pond far.
He is sad. He may be possessed. But be glad.
Pond far. He's going through the pond far.
If he 10.
His dog.
If he 13.
Will you stop with the stupid.
Oh, you said, I thought you said pond far every 7 years.
That's what I just said, that. The pond far.
There you go. Dogs need to be careful of their health, as it is easier in chosen years for them to get diseases of aging. They explain. That's the end of that. So as they get older, Mike-san, as you get older, you are more susceptible to possessions of aging.
Whoa.
There you go.
Imitations.
Joe, you know, they're going to be downstairs waiting for you.
You have.
That's not funny.
They have. You have possessed by spirit that wrinkle your brow. Make your pubic hair gray.
You. Joe.
You are possessed by the white spirit.
Go to the next.
Mike, have you seen all the commercials now with the Klingon? With the
No, you know I haven't.
He doesn't have a TV.
I don't watch TV.
With all the
I haven't seen any commercials in 30
with
years.
With all the Vulcans talking.
No.
There's all these commercials now that the Vulcans are selling stuff like it's a normal thing.
Vulcans selling stuff. It would be illogical to miss this sale.
Yeah,
exactly what they're
doing. There's the one geek guy. I saw that commercial. The Spock wannabe. Right. Man arrested. Chris Taylor arrested after giving teens drunken gun safety lecture using a legal pistol, and his nickname is Schmuck.
Okay, talk to me.
There you go. looks like an actor.
Like an ex-actor, an actor who used to work and now no longer does.
Well, music's too loud. Turn it down. I can't hear myself think.
I can hear you.
Police said that they were called to the store after Christopher Schmuck tried to educate the youngster about guns while highly intoxicated. There you go. A man with the surname Schmuck. It's like, how many times do they want to get that in the article, you know? It's like... was arrested after allegedly... Oh, now it's allegedly. Giving teenagers a lecture...
Allegedly because he has a lawyer.
On gun safety using an illegal loaded firearm while drunk. Police in Carlisle, Pennsylvania said that they were called to the store after Christopher... What's his last name?
Schmuck.
Tried to educate the young... It's the same thing over and over again. There's nothing new here.
Well, that's it. It's because you got the read the abstract and then you read the...
All right. So then he had a 45 caliber Glock shotgun. Oh, excuse me. Glock handgun in his trousers.
I was going to say Glock makes a shotgun now.
There you go. It was a Glock handgun in his trousers. And at one point had a bullet in the chamber.
Is that a Glock in your trousers, or are you just happy to see me?
I got a Glock in my pocket and one in the chamber to go. Pennsylvania has a specific law that requires a license for a concealed carry of a firearm and the carry of firearms in vehicles. So wait, if you put the gun in a car, it's concealed?
Yes, essentially.
So if he would have been drunk and waving it around, he was fine, but because he had it in his pocket and he was drunk, they got him on two counts. So here's something, because before we go on.
Yes.
So a guy comes up from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Is this a joke?
No, this is a true story.
Guy walks into a bar?
No.
Guy comes up from
Charlotte. Buys a house here in New York. He's going to fix it up. He's a handyman and flip it. Because he has a business in Carolinas, he has a carrier's permit. Comes to New York. Now,
is this a white guy?
No.
So, is he dead at the end of the story?
No.
Oh.
By law, when you cross the state line, you're supposed to go to the nearest precinct and surrender the gun until you leave the state, then you can come and pick it up again. So this guy's doing work on his house. While he's doing work on the house, these two guys come to rob him, beat him up, take some of his tools and money. He calls the cops. Guess who's arrested and going to court now? He, because he informs the cops when he gets there that I have a gun. And
is
I have
he
a
black?
Life.
Is he black?
Yes.
And well, there it is.
But no, the whole thing is...
No, yes. Don't say no, yes.
Yes
don't
and no.
Don't say no, yes. Listen to me. Okay, I'm going to read you a story.
But he wasn't shot.
Yeah, he wasn't shot. Like, he's a lucky man. Okay, I'm going to read you a story.
Okay, read me a story.
I'll read your story. I can read you multiple stories from this week of black men who were shot and killed.
I'm not debating
with
that.
With no gun, okay? But, okay, here, I'm going to read you this story. And this kind of speaks for itself.
So basically, if the law is what the law is, they should have just let him go? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that they should have let him go. I'm saying he's glad he's alive. I'm saying I'm glad he's alive. That's what I'm saying. That's basically what I'm saying.
So then it's up to the judge to turn around and say either dismissed or dismissed or, you know, sir, hand over your gun.
Yes. 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 Yes, it is. I have a story I don't know if I really want to read without having a female here as well.
Why it's a female?
Well, I'll just read the title of the story. Title of the story, Semen is Good for You. Is Good for Women's Health.
Yeah, we're talking about guns. How did we get to that story?
I'm just saying, I have that story.
Elaine is not here.
I know. Yeah. We can't really read that story without a woman here. It'll just sound too misogynistic.
Well, you know, we have Joe. Joe's familiar with that.
Yeah, but Joe doesn't really. He's not.
You need a woman's point of view.
You do.
Because if I start wising off on it, then the crowd will really be down the stairs with the torches and pitchforks.
Yes, as a matter of fact, they would.
Even if Mike read that story, they'd be downstairs with the pitchforks.
Please. Well, I mean,
Frank, I think, you know, I think you... Who wrote it? A man wrote it?
Wrote what?
The article.
What article?
What do you think about this whole Megyn Kelly situation?
What Megyn Kelly situation?
Her whole being...
Who's Megyn Kelly?
The Fox
show.
What about her? What did she do next?
I got let go.
She got let go for what?
In the South Sea.
Because they didn't renew her contract.
Why?
Well, they said...
Is she the one that was fighting with Trump?
No. Yes. And then she was also fighting...
So what is the deal with... Who cares about Megyn Kelly?
But then she got...
Who cares?
All right.
No, but you tell me. You tell me why. I don't even know.
They said they let her go because that of her ratings.
And?
As it turns out... At last check, she was the highest rated morning person.
All right, so, okay, and what's
the
point?
And then the other thing, too, is like she says that it was a whole man thing there and that they
were... A man thing?
At the, that
Are
the,
you really using Megyn Kelly as an example
of I'm
sexism?
No, I'm not.
Okay,
but
what?
It is what? Rampant.
I'm just like, Megyn Kelly, please. I just can't. I have no sympathy.
Okay.
I can't.
Are you
I
saying
can't
that as a man or
I say that as a man, as an African American man, as a citizen, as a sentient being.
As, what was that second to last word you
citizen.
Used?
Citizen.
Oh, citizen, okay.
Citizen.
I didn't get that.
I Megyn Kelly.
I don't know what it was.
Whatever.
She'll have she'll wait it out.
She'll wait it out, yeah. She'll get another gig.
Think she should maybe then run for vice president with Trump?
Listen, I think she should be on a ticket with Hillary.
No.
Yes.
No.
She needs some hot, young freshness.
No Nancy Pelosi then, or Elizabeth Warren?
I'm just saying. Elizabeth Warren, yes. I'm with Elizabeth Warren.
Okay.
I would vote for Elizabeth
You think
Warren.
She's going to offer... You think she's going to offer to Bernie?
No.
Think he'll get a cabinet post? Mm. Or Bernie doesn't
not
want it.
Not even close. Not even
Bernie
close.
Bernie doesn't want it.
Bernie's not that guy. He's not that guy.
Who is that guy, Bernie?
Because you know why? If Bernie were
Feel
to become if Bernie were to become vice president, he would redefine what it is to be vice president.
He would.
And it wouldn't work.
He wouldn't shut
work.
Up.
It wouldn't work.
He's an old Jewish guy.
Well, he's about
She'd be making her change. Briefings and he'd be like
He's about change.
Excuse
and
me.
These are changes that will never come like this. As a matter of fact, you know what's interesting?
When
we get to this article, you know, they talk about the difficulties of changing, you know, the inherent racism and all of that stuff in this country. And you know what? The honest truth is, all throughout history, whatever the dominant culture is, whether it's the dominant religion, the dominant culture, whether the colonialism did it, or whoever it is that's in power, is not going to let go of power easy.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
It's not. They're going to end up like Trump is the new Nero. He's going to fiddle while the country burns.
So looking back, because they say in 2060, you know, two-thirds of the nation will be, you know, it'll be a minority majority. Okay, so that means, you know, in what, 40 years, you know, so they'll look back on this as like, yes, this is the last gasp of the power structure that was trying to hold on. They created something. Hey, it's great. Create this America. There's this land of the free. Everybody wants to come. Everybody around the planet is not primarily the dominant culture in this country.
No, it's not.
So it's going to change. It's just, you know, that's just human.
It's
just
the old white men bolstered by corporations run by old white men.
But there it is. They're not going to let it go. You know, they're not going to let it go.
Listen,
Pontius Pilate wasn't ready to let it go.
No. That was different. It wasn't that he wasn't. He was just in a. He was governor.
In a difficult, yeah, right. But I mean, the people who were in charge.
Yeah.
They
accused the old Jews.
The old Jews
who were trying to get the Romans to crucify.
They were in power, so they're not going to let it go.
No.
It doesn't mean that the Jews are bad.
No,
it
just means they were in power at the time.
That's just the way it is, you know? Whether they're good in power, bad in power, the Romans,
so
apartheid.
Who's in power now?
The
old white people.
The white majority.
The old white
right
men.
Now, white majority.
But not just the white majority. The power structure of the past is still in power. You know, the thinking of the past. Listen to me. The whole concept behind... white
the South
privilege.
Still thinks it's going to rise again.
Well, it's more than just the South. It's a thinking, you know. Even if you're well, that's why this article is great. I will read the article, but we have some other stories to get to, and you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio.
You are
WBAI.
You must be if you're listening to us.
I hear something playing in the background. I don't know what that was.
Chris, stop playing music in the background. We don't care about your playlist, Chris.
I'm not playing any music in the background.
You, stop now.
You know what's interesting? If you were to look at Ted Turner from being from the South, than...
You think he should be president?
No. No. The, a fundamental news organization at this point that...
There is no more news in this country.
Yeah, but CNN has
There's
a pretty
There's no more
good
truth in this country. There's just media.
There are truths, but do people want to listen to them?
There's no truth. There's just media.
No, but that's not the point. The point is that where do you when you want to see news immediately, what do you turn to? Most people turn to CNN.
I turn to The Daily Show. I turn to The Nightly Show. I turn to NPR.
I'm talking about, about aftermath news. I'm talking about like when something's happening in the immediate.
Do you know what Trevor Noah said last week?
Who?
Trevor Noah, the Daily Show.
Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah. He made a good point. He did. He said, why is it that a child falls into a gorilla pen, the gorilla is shot, and the zoo turns around and says that we are going to re-examine our situation and make immediate changes, but yet a black person in America is shot,
exactly.
And not the police department nor the federal government
absolutely
is willing to take a stand.
And listen to me, and let me just say this. I said this on my Facebook. If all of this that is going on with African Americans in this country, you know, three countries right now have issued, you know, this is Travel Agent Joe, have issued alerts to their citizens of color that this is what's going on in this country.
Yes.
Be aware that if you come here, you could die. You could be persecuted. You could be killed by police being unarmed. They killed an unarmed... I was reading about... Just looking back, I just put in unarmed black man killed by police. And, you know, bazillion things come up. And there's a story from March. I didn't even hear about it. Where this unarmed black teen, naked...
Naked?
Naked, unarmed black teen was killed.
Why was he naked?
What, it doesn't matter. He came out of whatever it is. He got shot. He got killed. Unarmed. Naked.
Right, yeah, he was walking.
Whatever. He was black. He was black. That's what it is. He was black. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Just like this former detective says, they're prone to criminals. So, you know, if you've got this culture existing.
I know.
And wait, stay with me
I'm
now.
Staying with
all
you.
I'm saying.
Here. I'm holding
all
on I'm, to the mic.
Are you holding on there, Joe?
I'm on
Joe,
to the mic.
Are you holding on? So
I'm
all
going
I'm saying
up that
is,
hill.
This is if we have all this going on and we have a black president in the office.
Right.
And this administration is not reforming the police, the concept of what police should be, the support, whether it's psychological, whether it's screening of people, whether it's training, whatever it would take to change this culture nationwide. If it's not a priority for this administration, it doesn't matter who gets elected this fall.
It doesn't matter
because it's not going to change. It'll only be worse.
It will.
That's what I'm saying.
It will.
And that's what scares me.
Well, now, which brings me back to my point of Jeff Goldblum and the chaos theory.
Jeff Goldblum and the chaos
theory.
That's a great name for a band, though, by the way.
Jeff Goldblum
and the chaos theory.
You can see
and their first album. Their first album is called Jurassic Park. Yeah.
There you go.
Jeff Goldblum and the chaos theory.
There you go. So that's why I say if you really want to see the political system in this country implode, we know that if Hillary gets into office, it's going to be business as usual. It is, because if President Obama couldn't get changes pushed through, if he couldn't get changes pushed through that he was passionate about, if the House and the Senate remain Republican, what can Hillary do? Nothing.
It's not about what Hillary can do.
No, but I'm
in,
just saying,
in any way. Let me just say this.
If Trump got in and he was trying to push stuff through and the Republican regime was not copacetic with it.
Listen to me. Trump's not trying to push a damn thing through.
No, but it would
He's
be,
not trying to push anything through. He's just going to get in however it takes.
It
whatever
would be
it takes.
Interesting. I wonder if he
He's
would,
not trying to push anything
I
through.
Wonder if,
maybe the wall.
But it would be interesting. It would be entertaining. Come on.
It'd be entertaining to you. To me, it would not be entertaining. I'd be like, some people find horror movies entertaining, and some people think they're scary. To me, it would not be entertaining. It would be scary.
I think there would be a mass migration to Canada. So
bring the ship closer, Joe.
So there you go.
The body of the life force, represent with my man right here, DJ Cam, from the newest, the truest, Soul Shine, 2002 and forever. Alright? Peace.
So you saw Secret Life of Pets?
Yes, I did.
And you liked it?
I liked it very much.
I liked it quite a bit, actually. I was
and
surprised.
The 3D was very good.
The 3D was good. Well, animated films are always going to have better 3D because they're created in 3D. They're in that realm. So it's always going to be, you know, as opposed to enhanced or how they shoot it or whatever. But or a secondary process. But I really did. I thought, I do think that Pixar, over the last 20 years, has raised the bar for animated films, you know, and really, you know, focus not just so much on story and character, but really being aware that, you know, there are adults there, you know, and there's so much. I think that this movie works on two levels. I mean,
well, Illumination Studios from Despicable Me 1 and 2 to Minions.
And I got to say, because I don't get the whole Minions thing. Everybody loves Minions. You kind of look like a Minion, Joe. But I don't.
Oh, dude, I saw a Minion at the airport.
You saw a Minion at the airport?
When we were traveling back in May,
Yes, you could.
No, he had black Timberland work boots on. He had blue overalls.
And did he talk about it?
And he had a yellow shirt.
Wow.
So.
Well, maybe he knew and he was just rocking it.
Like, I don't know.
Can you get women if you dress like a Minion? Like shave the top of your head and just.
Yeah, he did. He was bald kind of thing.
He was bald. Did he have one eye?
No.
Okay. Chris, can you pull off the whole Minion look?
He's got a ponytail.
He does. Is he still there? Chris, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, you're still there. Okay. Have you?
Yeah, I'm just nice and quiet because I just love listening to you guys talk.
Thank you.
Do you?
We rock him gently our dulcet tones.
That sounds so good. It's just awesome.
Really? Are you listening on headphones?
No, I'm just sitting here just listening on the phone. It sounds like I'm like in the studio with you. It's bizarre.
And you don't have a headset? Where's your headset, man? Where's your headphones?
Dude, I'm out of the show.
You should have like some earbuds, man. You could be chilling.
I'm in my van. It's like, you're in your van. I'm naked.
You lost your property and you're living in your van now?
Yeah, he's out of the show.
No, I'm out of the show.
When you go to the show, you live in your van?
Yeah, why not?
You don't even get a Red Roof in just to S.
Ah, live in a van. He's a hippie.
Oh, you don't need to do all that. It's too much.
You got one of those.
You don't need to shower.
You got one of those.
There's a porta potty
here. There's a porta potty.
I get hotels. I get motel rooms.
Okay. I was picturing you.
He only gets motel rooms if he gets if he gets lucky.
I was picturing you like Marc Maron living out of your storage unit with a Home Depot bucket and a toilet seat on it.
What's a Home Depot bucket?
You know, the orange buckets that they sell at Home Depot
Do they sell orange buckets at Home Depot?
Yeah, it has Home Depot.
See, I don't go to Home Depot.
And
so
it's like, you know, you could plaster and use it for hauling garbage.
Stop.
Yeah, so in the new season of Marc Maron, he's like homeless and he keeps telling everybody he's living in an artist commune. He has a studio apartment in an artist commune, but he's actually living out of his storage unit and he's got a orange...
Is a friend of yours?
Marc Maron, the comedian.
No, who's Marc Maron, the comedian? You say like I know this
Mike,
person.
You're just completely oblivious.
Is he on TV? Is he on TV?
He's on
Joe
IFC.
Watches so many shows.
All right, see, I don't watch TV, so I don't know.
Joe's
so go ahead.
So
he's not really living. He's a comedian. It's a joke.
Right, but he did have a problem with drugs for many years, and so he makes fun
of
that.
He talks about the homeless life.
Yes.
Because he's been there.
Yes.
He's lived it.
Talks about rehab. Talks about the 9-step program.
Someone was talking about, because we're going to get into the whole racial thing. Someone was talking about there could be a culture, a cottage industry for car cams for black car owners because they get pulled over all the time. And then, you know, then the police will say, oh, the body cam dislodged when we killed you. You know, so like that's it. Like invisible, you know, spy cams for your black car owners.
It was funny because I can't remember if it was Larry or Trevor.
Yeah.
Turned around and said, why do go cams only stick to white people's stuff?
What do you mean?
He's like, there was like, he had this like guy who took some footage with a go cam and a couple of guys, and they fell off. And he's like, but yet look, you got white guys jumping on bicycles and the sticks on or doing this or whatever. But
is this a comedian?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
No, I haven't
like,
seen this on
they
TV.
They don't fall off. Trevor Noah.
Oh, Trevor Noah. Okay.
Or Larry Wilmore. You know who Larry Wilmore is.
I know who they
Larry
both are.
Larry Wilmore's great.
Listen, I've been on TV talking
about
him.
I've been to Larry's show a couple of times.
You've gone to Larry Wilmore's show? Really?
I love Larry
Wilmore. So you're Larry. You love Larry.
I love him. He's a great writer.
Really?
Yes.
You're a Larry Wilmore fan.
I'm a fan.
You're a fan.
Wow. I think he's a great writer.
You're one of the Fenn.
Yes. He was great when he was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Really? He got his show from that.
Yes.
Well, there was a chick on there too, but she didn't get a show. Why didn't she get a show?
She actually has a podcast.
What's
now.
Her name? Chick is very sexist, but what's her name?
The one with the dreadlocks?
No, not her, but I know about her too. But there's another one too.
The white chick?
The white chick. With See, the you called her a chick too. I don't feel bad.
Well, she was a chick because she was like that skinny white chick with the big nose. And she had the nasally rasp.
You guys,
and,
you know.
She's done a bunch of commercials.
White chick with the big nose. She's probably like making
that's not right.
Like
that's
much more money than you or me combined.
Listen, these were words that I would use to
describe your woman.
No, to describe a perp. You know, if they were questioning me at a police station.
At a perp, at a police station. Yeah. This is what
skinny,
I saw.
Big nose
and a black guy with big lips.
You know, you guys.
Yeah.
Speaking of which is very interesting.
What?
I started on HBO. Chris, do you have HBO?
Yeah.
Did you watch? Did you watch The Night Of?
No.
I highly recommend it. It's a Rashomon in real time kind of thing of a crime. And the funny thing is,
Rashomon in real time.
There's these two guys walking down the street and they walk past an Arab American.
Okay.
And they start making derogatory comments at him and stuff and whatnot.
Okay.
And then later on, after the crime has happened, one of the guys is back. Obviously, he's been partying, having a good time. And the detective is standing there, and he overhears him saying to the cop, "So did the dude kill her? Did it happen? Did he kill her? Is she alive? What's going on over there? I knew it because he calls him a towel head and stuff and whatnot. You know, it's TV, they're doing whatever. But he's like, I knew he was going to do it. It looked like him. He's like,
What are we talking about?
This TV show. So they pull him into the station because the cop says to him, you gotta come down to the station and we need to take a statement. I got places to go and people to see. And the cop goes, well, if I turn you upside down and shook you, how much weed would come out of you? And he's like, alright, I'm coming. So as soon as he walks into the station, the guy is there, and they don't know that they have the guy yet. And at one point he just walks in and goes, yo, 5-0, that's the dude.
What show is this, Joe?
It's called The Night Of.
The Night Of.
It's a crime drama based on real events kind of thing. But then they're making the guy wait and...
So wait, why are you bringing this up now?
Because we were talking about descriptions and stuff like
this guy's
using descriptions to, you know, describe this guy. And
Mike, just let Joe go, man.
I want to make sure other people know what the hell he's talking about.
He's saying things like I would be saying, you know, to some degree. But the cop turns around and tells the guy, listen, just pick the guy out. I don't need the op-ed.
I understand.
If Joe says the show is good, the show
is
good.
It's good.
I understand.
I would watch it.
Mike, you know, Joe doesn't just throw that out like you.
James Gandolfini
was supposed to do next, but he passed.
I'll ask Joe. Joe, yes. What did Mike give a good review that wasn't good? Come on.
I didn't bring the list.
Yeah, right, the list. Yeah, right, whatever.
Yeah. Extraordinary.
Just because, first of all, if you don't like what I like, that's on you. You know what I'm saying?
Mike likes
you
a lot. Mike,
appreciate what I appreciate.
Listen, don't make me.
That's on
I'll
you.
I'll throw it out there.
Throw what out there?
You no, Mike. When you
Mike
say
particularly
good,
likes
I know.
Films with white people in them.
Well, first of all, if I like films in general, I have to like a lot of films with white people in them because there are a lot of films.
I'm just teasing.
With white people in
I'm
them.
I'm teasing. I was just thinking. I was thinking of Robin Williams and.
What?
What's that name? That singer that was in that movie about the marriage kind of thing? That
Joe, you're out on a limb.
No,
that'd be the name.
I'll bring the video. I'll bring the soundbite next week.
Out on a limb.
I'll bring the soundbite.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Joe.
Joe Masseri. I watched a lot of TV.
Exactly. Joe Masseri.
When
they have the commercial for Joe's show, you just see Joe talking. It's all non sequitur. None of it makes sense. And then he goes.
There you go. At least
exactly.
I
fact check. Exactly. And at the end, he
at least I fact check.
And at the end, he goes, there you go.
I fact check. Yeah. I have my facts.
Mike, Joe used to watch like Get Smart, Into the Munsters, It's Gilligan's Island. He used to rack them up, man.
Yeah, but when we were kids, we used to watch a lot of stuff.
Listen, I grew up on TV. You know? Don't get me wrong. I don't have any. I'm not like, too good for TV.
To quote the Minions, Mike thinks TV is poo-poo caca.
No, that's not true. I think TV's in a renaissance. I think it's the best time for TV ever. The best stuff. I think, first of all, I'll tell you what I think. I think that...
What do you think?
This is what I think. I think
Tell us, Wilbur.
Nighttime soaps changed...
Nighttime soaps?
Nighttime soaps changed the face of TV. Because what they found is, as opposed to singular episodes, stories, self-contained stories, they realized they could hook a bigger audience and create events on TV when people get hooked.
So like,
and they use the soap operas.
Can,
and I'm saying Dallas, Dynasty, Falcon Crest, those are the precursors to what we see on TV today. And by the time cable came along, where you could not only have soap operas and continuing storylines, that you could do it and be adult about it and have The Sopranos, boom!
So basically, TV we were today. Talking about transmedia, nonlinear narrative.
Transmedia, that's a whole other. Just transmedia.
So you're
talking
about nonlinear.
First of all, narrative. Heroes is transmedia, and it still didn't get picked up.
What, you know, what's fascinating is, like, just the other night, Johnny Depp doing as Whitey Bulger with Kevin Bacon. And like a, you know, a full cast on HBO.
Oh, you're talking about Black Mass?
Black Mass, yeah. It wasn't that good, but I'm just saying, like, there it is. There's Johnny Depp, Kevin Bacon. It's just like almost like a movie, and it's on HBO.
Almost like a movie. What do you mean, almost like a movie? It's not an HBO movie. It's a movie that was in the theaters, babe.
Yeah, I know, but
I don't know what you're talking about, Chris. You're out there on that Joe Limb.
Now, here's something else. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about transmedia non-linear storytelling.
Non-Latin.
Linear.
What's wrong with Latin?
Stop. Have you been watching Preacher?
I watched 2 episodes and I had to stop.
Now, do you know that they've been rebundling the 2 episodes together, doing a elongated extra footage rebroadcasted like at the wee hours of the morning of the show? So instead of 1 episode being an hour each, they have 2 episodes together at 2:35. Did you know this?
Oh.
Yep. So because I had set it up to DVR, and all of a sudden my recorder was recording in the wee hours of the morning, and I looked, and they bundle them up, and I actually watched them, and they're actually, because they're showing them in the wee hours of the morning, they're a little bit more graphic and violent than even, and more story content than what they've been showing.
How about this?
With fewer commercials, but I may add.
Maybe it just seems better to you because it's late at night and you're half asleep.
No, I watch it
and
during
the
regular hours.
Directed by Mike. You know who's directing them?
Some of them are Seth Grogan.
Seth Grogan.
He's producing the show.
Yeah.
He's a fan of the comic.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I know all about Preacher. I just haven't seen it.
I got to tell you, Jackie Earle, what's his name?
Jackie Earle Haley.
He's insane.
He's from, what was that kid's movie he did back in the day? Was he in Explorers? Which one was he in?
No, like.
He was in one of them.
Bad News Bears.
Was it Bad News Bears?
Yeah.
Was that the one he was in? Because then he kind of grew up and became like.
And then he was Freddy Krueger.
He was, only briefly on the TV series.
No,
right?
The relaunch.
In the relaunch, he was in the newer
Kruger.
Yeah, but that's after. Wasn't that
and
after
then
the
was,
in?
Then he was Rorschach in The Watchmen, which he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was very good in The Watchmen. He was good. I just watched the I was telling Chris I watched the director's cut.
Yeah, it's very good.
And you know they just released the director's cut of Batman vs. Superman. I went to see that in the theater. Okay, just
I feel sorry for you.
No, I did. Listen, because
I would rather after seeing it once, I would rather sit at home.
Here's the deal. Can I
in
I
my
speak?
Shorts?
Can I speak
have
on
a beer?
This? Can I speak on this?
Smoke a cigar.
First of all, watching The Watchmen before I watched.
You watched The Watchmen?
I watched The Watchmen, the 4-hour epic version with the comic in between and everything. I watched that whole thing, and then I'm remembering where. Zack Snyder came from. He kind of got lucky.
Trauma. Slithers.
Well, Slithers, okay.
No, he came from Trauma.
Or Trauma, okay, but what
then
I'm getting at...
Then he did Slithers, then he did the remake of
Dawn of the Dead. And I'm saying that he's a horror guy. He's a horror guy. He likes the darkness. And when you see The Watchmen, you see why he picked that to do. I thought that one he did with the girls in the Asylum was terrible. Sucker Punch, I thought that was a piece of crap.
Well, that's
it was
did
awful.
It after 300?
Yeah, he did it after 300. Yes,
yeah, it was a vanity project.
He did it the same time.
Because he wrote that too.
Yes, he did. It was terrible. Yeah. But seeing him.
What was it? It was terrible.
It was terrible.
The music
but here's
was
the
good.
Thing. The music was good. It was fine.
The visuals were okay.
The visuals were okay.
Not
listen,
much
he
else.
Always does good visuals.
Yes.
I give it to him. But here's the thing. Here's what I'm getting. What he's trying to
what
do.
What are you getting?
What he's trying to do, he's bringing that dark sensibility to everything. That's really what he's trying to do. When you see the new version of Batman vs. Superman, it's not a great film. it's better than what we saw in the theaters, which was a mess. It's definitely a better film. But seeing that and seeing The Watchmen and then remembering his history, which you just talked about, Slithers and that gallows humor and the darkness.
So can I go on this, a limb?
I'm just saying, this is what Zack Snyder. All I'm saying is this is who he is. Okay. I'm not saying I'm a fan, but I get it. I get who he is.
I get Zack Snyder. There's a studio that's been talking about doing a reboot. And if they do it, they need to get Christian Bale in the lead, okay? And they need to get Zack Snyder to direct and rewrite it.
What is that?
The Shadow.
Yeah, Zack Snyder could do something with The Shadow. See, given the right property,
right,
and he could do something.
Christian Bale as Lamont Cranston.
Well, Christian Bale would be very good, but he couldn't do it because he's too close to Batman.
But it's not Batman.
It's not Batman, but it's too close. It doesn't matter. It's too close.
So who would you
never do it? I'm not saying he wouldn't do it and he wouldn't be great, but he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do it because it's too close.
All right.
It's too close. But
are you
going to
go
very
see
good
Planet
cast.
Of the Apes next week?
Planet of the Apes? No, but I'm going to see Star Trek this week.
I know. We had that conversation.
And now, can we talk about it? It's the 12th. We can talk about Ghostbusters, right?
No, it's the 12th, but we can't talk about it until the 13th.
Mm.
But I will just say this.
Much better than I expected.
We both liked it.
They're going to show Planet of the Apes, the old one.
Yeah, on the 24th. Yeah, I'm going.
Chris,
2 o'clock.
Chris,
I'll be there.
Better
Empire.
Than that?
What?
Even better than that? Up until a few weeks ago, and I subjected my daughter to this, they had all remastered 5 Planet of the Apes movies, the originals, on Cinemax.
Fantastic.
And I had her for a weekend, and I was like, because she was a fan of the first one. She hadn't seen really the other ones. And we like went ape on a Sunday.
You went ape with your daughter. That
yeah, we watched all 5.
That's a beautiful thing, Joe.
There you go.
That's a beautiful thing. Joe, have you seen, I saw this out in Queens over the weekend, Car Eyelashes.
Yeah, I've seen those.
What is that? What, is that like a Mad Max thing? What is that?
That's white people with too much money.
No, this was not a white neighborhood.
No?
This was a black neighborhood. The rider, the driver was a black woman. She was like done up like the car with the eyelashes. And I was like, wow, when did this happen? So you've seen this.
Yeah, I have.
You've seen this. Now, also, just in the midst of all this, do you remember that there was a congressman in Arizona that's trying to pass a bill to make it illegal for people to film a police doing their duty?
Yes.
You remember this?
Yes.
Life is like science fiction.
There's so much craziness going on.
Now, and the Alert USA. Did I send you the Alert USA?
No.
Joe, I sent it to Chris. Chris knows what I'm talking about. But I'm gonna read this to you.
Does Chris need to be alerted?
Okay, this is from the.
No, thing. But it was. It
all
was
right. First of all, I didn't know there was such a thing as Alert USA. Okay, it's a website. Okay, I'll tell you a little more about it after I read this to you. But they posted this from Alert USA in something called Threat Journal.
Threat Journal.
Threat Journal. Okay, which posts weekly incidents and threats. And had this say, to say, and I'm quoting.
Is this like a site that like has like Ebola outbreaks?
And, everything. It's whatever you want to be like.
All
exactly.
over the world. It's
exactly.
Got
exactly.
From military.
Exactly.
To biological.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen it, and it's got the map with the pinpoints on it.
Well, that's one of the pages, but I'll show you the logo. I'm going to put it on the
Facebook. I've seen it. Yeah.
All right. Alerts USA again warned subscribers that racial tensions are building in America. And is expected to increase if you are white and living in or near urban areas. Alerts USA strongly recommends that you watch your back, avoid large gatherings, and increase your vigilance and threat awareness when out and about. The mood of crowds can change in an instant, and your safety is best maintained by avoiding them altogether. Now, first of all, Joe, this is a subscriber service. You pay for this information.
You're not paying for it, are you?
Tell me, please. Tell me. And here it is. Look at the logo. It's like a colonial guy with a shotgun, and the logo says, "Increase your awareness." Do you see that?
I see it. I mean, the guy looks like Abraham Lincoln without the hat.
Exactly! It's like Abraham Lincoln with a gun, and it's like, is that the Confederate flag in the background? I can't tell. It's just, Chris, I sent it to you, so you know what I'm talking about.
Which is just shocking.
Mind-boggling. So, I do want to read this article to you, but Joe, you had a story that you're going to get to before we get to that.
Now you tell me.
Yeah, well, that was your last assignment, Joe.
Basically, Joe, be careful.
Crabs covering floor of New York subway car are a smelly mystery.
Now, did you know about this? Had you heard about this?
Yeah, I saw the story on Facebook.
I didn't see the story. Go ahead. Talk to me.
It's back on
Chris, did you know about this?
No.
At least 50... It's 50 live crabs. I mean, it's not
That's 50 crabs. You're on the subway, and 50 crabs are on the floor.
Some guy could have had a bag of crabs in a
That's a big bag of crabs.
No, it's not.
50 crabs is not a big bag.
A bushel,
yes, of course.
A bushel is 144.
Who carries a bushel of crabs on the subway?
No, a bushel is 144.
Okay.
You can get 50 crabs.
Humans can't carry 144 crabs.
Yeah, you can.
You can carry 144?
Yeah.
What, on your back?
No, I bought them for the holidays.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
But if the guy had 50 crabs in a paper bag and they it was wet and the
50 crabs in a paper bag.
That's 50 crabs in a paper bag. No, this is just
that's three dozen crabs.
Okay, fine. Okay, it's no big deal. Go to the next No big deal. Next story.
It's not like it was
no
like
big deal.
In the,
50
in the
crabs
yard.
On the subway.
It's not like it was
no big deal.
It's a moving train. If it had been parked in
50 crabs on the subway, that's no big deal. Deal. Step aside. It's my stop.
It's New York.
It's New York. 50 crabs.
50 crabs, 50 rats,
no
50 pigeons.
Thing but a chicken
no
wing.
There you go. There you go.
50 crabs on the subway.
There you go.
Bring the subway closer.
Thumb sucking, nail biting have a positive side. Kids less likely to develop allergies.
Talk to me.
That's because they're cannibalizing themselves.
Stop.
It's true. Children who are thumb suckers or nail biters are less likely to develop allergic sensitivities.
Why is that?
Researchers have found. And if they have both bad habits, they are even less likely to be allergic to such things as house dust, mites, grass, cats, dogs, horses, and airborne fungi. And if they eat their boogers... They're even more apt.
Not say that. You just stop it, Joe.
Sorry. That doesn't say that.
So there you go. The finding emerges from a long-running Dunedin multidisciplinary study, which was followed the progress of 1,037 participants born in Dunedin, New Zealand, in 1972-73 into adulthood. Look, the kid's like, he's like sucking his thumb and eating his boogers at the same time.
Think about boogers.
Look, he's eating his boogers.
He is not eating his boogers. Your interpretation of that
his
photo.
Boogers.
Just tell me the news.
The news. Mike, stop eating your boogers.
You know, Joe.
There you go. When, children who are thumb suckers. Yeah,
when I hit you.
And if they have both bad habits. Such thing as house. Okay, we read that. The researcher published in the Journal of Pediatrics was completed by researchers in Dunedin School of Medicine. Yada yada yada. Our findings are consistent with the hygiene theory that early exposure to
the hygiene theory.
Yeah, like you tell your kid to go play in the dirt, he's going to be exposed to more things, so therefore he develops.
Crabs. Go play in the dirt.
Go play. Yeah, the kid. That's a problem. How many kids
go
today?
Go play in the dirt, Joe.
When you were a kid growing up, did you play in the dirt?
Did I play in a dirt pile? No. Chris asked me the same question. I was not in the dirt pile.
You see, I'm not Mike didn't have a dirt pile. I asked him that last week. He won't confess. No dirt pile for Mike.
We had a backyard that was dirt and grass. Did you have a backyard?
I had a backyard.
Was it concrete?
No.
Well,
concrete? What do you think? Where did I live? In the compound.
In the compound. There
was
you
your
go.
Backyard concrete? No, yes. It I lived in the concrete jungle. No, I had a backyard. I had grass.
So therefore you were exposed to more allergies
than
kids
G.I. Joe's. He didn't have Tonkas.
I had G.I. Joe.
I'm not even going that far.
I had G.I.
Okay, but
I'm
Mike
just
had
saying.
Nothing.
I'm just saying.
Dirt pile.
It makes eminent sense. Because if you think
Eminem
about
sense,
eminent
like
sense,
sixth, seventh mile.
Because most of the kids today live in such sterile environments.
Eight
I mean,
mile.
How did other than
Mike
Lysol spray?
Book. That's what
we
had.
Didn't have hand sanitizer. We didn't have hand sanitizer. We didn't have.
We didn't
know,
have hand sanitizer.
We didn't have the disinfectant wipes.
We didn't have disinfectant wipes.
Right.
We were living animals. We were like cavemen. We lived like cavemen back in the day.
You got schmutz on your face.
We didn't have cell phones. There was no such thing as the internet.
Your grandfather would spit on a dirty hanky and wash the schmutz off your face.
That never happened.
Chrome. That's what you have. You've got to cut. You put Mercurochrome on it.
Listen, stop. That was the Paul McCartney, Paul Simon song. So, but it makes sense. Think about it.
What makes sense?
The whole idea of kids playing.
Well, this is true. Sucking their thumb.
But because they put their hands in the dirt. They don't have allergies. Because
they're sucking up germs.
Exactly.
And gaining immunity.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
That's what you're saying?
So
there were what? What were
so here's because so here's the thing.
What?
If you think about it, all the I saw advertisements now on TV for fertility clinics.
Yeah.
So I would say we're 50 years away from these parents investing in these fertility
genetically created babies.
Children.
Of course.
That they're going to put locator chips in them and barcodes. On
listen,
the back of
you
their
know what chipping is coming. That was predicted on Night Shift. That's already happening. It's
so
happening.
I mean, they're chipping. My sister's dogs have chips in them. Like there who cares?
You start
if
with
they
the
ran
pets.
Away. I wouldn't want to
you
find them.
Start
so.
With the pets. You don't want your cat. Know, you want doggy.
I know some kids. If they ran away, lose. I wouldn't want to find them either. But that's
you don't
want to
lose doggy.
Especially if they have papers and you paid so much for them.
Doggy.
So. You don't want to lose. Doggy.
There you go.
Doggy. Great doggy close up.
Oh, I got to tell you this. You're going to laugh.
All right. Okay. Because I'm going to read the story.
Yeah, all right. Then we're gonna
go
laugh.
Ahead. Again.
So, hey, Chris.
Yeah.
So, Thursday night after Ghostbusters. Well, Wednesday.
Right. How was that, by the way?
I said we liked it.
We can't tell. It's an embargo, but it's much better than we expected.
Yes. So, I hail a cab.
All right.
And the guy starts telling us that he's 92 years old.
You had a 92-year-old driver?
Driver. And his name is
Methuselah.
Ricardo Rivera. He is Geraldo Rivera's brother. And we had this whole conversation. So Lisa looks at his license. Yes. He is 92 years old. And he's telling us stories about him and his brother and arguing about politics and, you know, how his mother said to 92 years old.
Right, but how old is...
He's Geraldo's older brother.
Geraldo's like 70?
Yeah.
Geraldo's yes, he's 71 now or something.
Yeah.
Wow.
Listen, you know who looks fantastic for 70?
Who?
Ernie Hudson.
Oh, he did. He looked fabulous.
Ernie Hudson looks fantastic. He's 70.
He
it's like, holy smoke.
He looked
smoke.
Better than Bill Murray.
He looked better. That's not saying anything. All I'm saying, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are like, they aren't unrecognizable. You look at Ernie Hudson, you're like, look, it's Ernie Hudson.
Dan Aykroyd was looking like slime.
He looked fantastic.
He did. He looked great.
He's got good jeans.
Black Ernie Hudson looks fantastic. That's all I got to say.
There you go.
You know, let me tell you, Mike, you're going to look exactly the same another 20 years from now. Because
I like that.
Good.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, if his father's jeans hold tight.
I know. I'm very happy. My dad is.
Your dad is like.
He's doing really good. He wouldn't want me to give out his age, but he's doing really good. And I'm
as
like,
soon as he moved far enough away from Mike, he started even doing better.
So,
every time I see him on those rare occasions, he like gets younger and younger. It's like he's like Cher. If I could turn back.
Joe, did you have G.I. Joe's, Joe, when you were a kid?
Yes.
You see, Mike? He had G.I. Joe's.
Oh, by the way, which Mike probably doesn't even know, which I was flabbergasted.
Real.
Have you seen the new Kentucky Fried Chicken commercials?
Yes, all of them. All
right. So, Mike.
What's his name?
Wait, hold.
I obviously have not seen the
okay,
new
Okay, so they're
Kentucky.
Pushing.
First of all, they don't call it Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore.
They call it KFC.
KFC.
But no, now they call it Kentucky Fried Chicken again because they're hand doing the stuff, supposedly.
What do you mean, hand doing?
They're supposedly
hand
battering.
They're throwing the chicken in there.
But so.
Hand battering? What is that? What does that mean?
Wait. So,
that's
they're
better.
Promoting their extra Crispy.
I know, of course.
All right, but who's playing the new colonel?
They got a black colonel now? Stop.
No.
What?
Somebody is close to black, but that's not black.
Somebody who's close to black that's not black. Well, the colonel. I mean, he loves chicken, so he's close to black.
No. Because it's double crispy.
Double crispy.
Yes. Who is the spoke actor? Who is the spokesman?
Who's double crispy?
And the first time we saw it, we were mortified because we didn't realize it was him. And then they thought, oh, my God.
I don't know.
No. I only saw it in passing, so I caught it at the end, Chris.
So he doesn't pretend to be the colonel.
Right.
He
pretends to be the colonel.
Is he shilling for the colonel? He is the new colonel?
Yes.
He's the new colonel.
He's the extra crispy colonel.
He's the extra crispy colonel. Does that mean he's black?
He looks really good.
He looks good, but he's...
He's an extra crispy colonel.
If you look at him quick, you could be a light-skinned black guy.
It's an actor that always has a suntan.
Yes, an actor that always has a suntan.
Stop. George Hamilton?
Yes.
George Hamilton is
extra crispy colonel.
Extra crispy. Of course he is.
Sunbaked. Sunbaked, yes.
Sunbaked.
I was dying. So.
George Hamilton is doing
extra crispy
KFC commercials.
Yes.
Listen, he's got a good agent.
That's life is like science fiction.
Right, so, Joe, the premise of this article is, and this is the Huffington Post, it's from a writer named Peter Coleman. He's a professor of psychology at Columbia University, okay? And he opens his article with a quote from Tupac Shakur. But what he gets to here is, and this is the question he poses. He says, I've studied and worked on these issues for decades and have been frequently approached by well-meaning whites who say, I get the problem of pervasive racism, but what can I really do? So, and this is what he puts out there, or what does he posits. So what can a well-intentioned white ally do to increase the probability of justice and reform and decrease the probability of violence in our communities? And then he breaks it down to what he calls his five guidelines. Okay.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to go into all the guidelines.
Why not?
But, well, I can if you want, okay?
Yeah, I think it's an important thing.
It is. It's interesting because I'm going to preface this to say that he breaks down these guidelines. And again, I feel as a Democrat or as a liberal or as a person who thinks a certain way, I think it's important for me to read what others are saying. Like, I've read some Republican, you know, let's just say, what they call conservative. To me, it's a code word for something else, but what they call conservative. And I'll be honest, you know, the most aggressive, let's just say, political coverage of things the way I see them are the same as their coverage. They see us as being as ridiculous, and our values and our and the things that we're holding and the things that we're saying as being as patently untrue as the things that we see.
You mean like the Constitution of the United States?
All of it, yeah. And their
starting with we hold these their truths to be
listen, their interpretation is completely different. And, you know, it's mind-blowing to me. But I say all that to say, so I do think it's important for you know, for people to have some sense of where the other person's coming from. You know, and as I was stating earlier, that I also think that living in the age we do, it, though we have access to so much information, we have a tendency to and he uses a great phrase in here. We have is a tendency. He talks about. Well, I'm going to get to it. That goes to that. All right. He talks about. He says, understand the deep structure of our challenges to inclusion and fairness. Let me. I got to change this music. It's a little too like happy. Like they're doing a dance to this. Okay.
Well, we need something more. That was just like too like.
Yeah, it was.
I felt like you were trying to take a bottle out with a corkscrew.
Okay, how about this?
Is but anyway, no. Just get to it.
All right. Anyway, it says to understand the deep structure of our challenges is to the deep structure of our. And keep in mind, I'm writing as him as a white man. To understand the deep structure of our challenges to inclusion and fairness, the system of inequality, racism, and violence in which our country is mired. Is highly complex and resilient. It has many layers from the thinnest to the thickest, including, and this is the first of his five guidelines, the competitive conflict layer, simple intergroup competition over scarce or otherwise important resources. And then he puts in brackets, good jobs, pay, housing, political office, etc. These conflicts can be particularly intense between members of different low power groups struggling for the scarcest of resources. Now, I want to pause there to say that, in my opinion, can be applied to any oppressed, low income, low class, just anybody who's denied anything.
Well, it's something that this country was built on. Look what happened in here in New York.
No.
You saw gangs in New York.
I did.
When they rioted because of the white people who were being subscripted to fight in the military and the blacks weren't.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah, but you got to understand something else. Just that the bigger picture to me is this country, as an economic force, as a military force, as a force in the world, was literally built on the backs of slaves on free labor. That was wealth.
Right.
Slavery. You know, the amount of slaves you own is wealth.
And you take that one step further, even though. There was a point when that started to change before the Civil War. There were still the repressed masses, be it the Chinese.
Well, again, class is a whole other thing.
Right.
You know, there's class is a whole other thing. And I'm talking about even outside of class, because when you're a slave, you're not, that's a whole other subclass. Even, but just.
Okay.
All right. Cause we're only, it's 2:20.
But they changed it. In other words,
who's they?
The people in power who, when they realized that the game was changing, they realized they came up with ways to change the rule of the game.
Well, I agree with you, but I only half agree with
Go
you.
Go ahead.
They did not realize or when or change the game. They did not change. They were forced to change. Okay, just like now.
But they readapted it to oppress people.
Well, again.
And they couldn't do it to the extent that they started to
found. They let go of what they could.
Right.
What they could, and they've held on to everything they can.
Right.
As you can say about the power structure.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's manifest and morphed and but transmogrified. 100%.
Yeah, no,
and
I agree.
All that. So then he says the second thing is the collective identity layer. Now, perceived threats to our collective identities. And he's talking about white people in general, and he says, which increase ethnocentrism, of course, stereotyping, bias, and discrimination are particularly toxic and can mobilize the politicization of groups and under certain conditions turn to violence. And the collective identity layer, and what he talks about, and he's just starting to touch upon it here, is, you know, what we've talked about here on the show, and you know my thoughts on it, that human beings are tribal, you know, that, you know, whatever group you belong to, you know, if you're a guy and you see women are oppressed, you could be all about women's rights, but, you know, you're still going to enjoy certain privileges that you have
as a guy.
Right. Okay. Whether you are conscious of it or not. So
it's like unions too.
Unions at least were created
with the best of intentions.
Within a society that already existed. Right. So, and then he talks about the cultural layer where fundamental cultural differences in beliefs, values, and norms complicate understanding and communication across groups. With multiculturalism, and he brackets multiple groups vying for resources and control, complicating matters considerably. Now, that's the other thing, getting down to, you know, they say never talk about politics or religion.
Right.
These are the core beliefs. This is what you stand for. This is how you see the world.
But let's address that cultural thing, because I'll take it to another level. In a short story that I wrote a long time ago, one of the things I addressed was the idea of a ghetto. Okay. As every group migrated to this country, they found themselves in a ghetto. And that was a double-edged sword, because while it was an area where they could be controlled, the other thing too was that they put things into place which made it very hard for themselves to break out of them. So if you think about each individual group that came to the city and where they settled, and how they opened up their own halls where they could perpetuate the cultural identity from which they came from, and not really promote the assimilation into the American society, that's a double-edged thing.
Okay, let me just stop you there, Joe, because I have to say, you know, you're speaking this about something I do feel strongly about. And one thing you do have to acknowledge, you know, no matter whether you're Chinese, Japanese, Russian, Italian, if you came to this country, especially in the history here, you came to this country. You came with your culture, you came with your history, you came with your religion, your food, all this stuff. There's a big difference between being brought here, okay, and being cut off.
Oh, no.
Stay with me.
I hear you.
Stay with me. So what has happened, okay, being brought here in that way, being cut off from your culture, your history and everything, and again, it initially as a population here, you have to create a very strong subculture, okay, which is why blacks have contributed so much to this culture. Not just that we're as cultural as it. We had no choice. We had to create. Now, it's not about, oh, back in the old country.
You didn't have a chance to do that. You were brought here against
exactly.
your will.
So I say all that to say there's a huge difference between the ghetto and what you can achieve as an immigrant versus a slave. You know,
right.
If you come from a history of immigrants, you know, most people in this country come from a long history. They're immigrants. They came here.
Right.
There's a big difference. Being brought here. You were brought here. And it's huge. It's huge because of why, and it permeates everything. Okay. Yeah. For both sides. So I say all that to say, I'm going to go to his third. Chris, are you with all this?
Yeah. Well,
okay. All right. Then he gets to this goes to what he calls the power layer. The fact that hierarchies of power relations are pervasive across societies, and that typically the mores, laws, policies, and institutions established by dominant groups and enforced by police reinforce the status quo. Okay. The fifth thing he calls the historical oppression layer. The fact that many marginalized groups have experienced long histories, this is what I was talking about, of discrimination, injustice, and oppression at the hands of the dominant groups, fueling a deep reservoir of negativity, distrust, and rage, at times setting a lower threshold for destructive intra-group and inter-group relations. And that's a really a nice intellectual way of saying that black people don't like it when you call them, you know, something. And he talks about something later on in here he calls there are a number of things that are, again, hearing this intellectualized is a very interesting thing for me as a black person to hear how these things are sort of expressed here.
You know, I have to tell you, one of the things that I am very grateful for is when I was growing up, the first 4 years of school, I went to public school, which was integrated by me, PS 87. We had a really nice rainbow coalition of ethnic and races kind of thing. And we even had special need kids in the school. And I can't...
You were one of them?
Yeah, thanks. I can't think of... And, you know, going up until fourth grade, the mentality there, I can't think of a better experience that I had, because being in that situation, I didn't get, I wasn't put in a position where every kid was their own individual kid. We didn't think of people as races, creeds, colors. We didn't discriminate. Now, in the fifth grade, my parents, because they didn't like what was happening in the public school system, and they were public school raised, sent us to the Catholic school. The following year in sixth grade, one of my teachers from the public school, Miss Edie, an African-American teacher, sent her two kids to the school that I went to, the Catholic school. And one of the things to this day that I'm very proud of that I went to the principal's office for was these kids who had gone to that Catholic school, a Catholic school where you're supposed to learn certain things and certain ethics and morals kind of thing. Because at that point, they were the only African-American kids in the school, a younger boy and his older sister. They were picking on them. And it got worse and worse until the point where I intervened, because it was getting nasty. And I'll never forget the teacher that I had in the public school thanking me for, and telling my mother and father, because we were all in the principal's office, thanking me for sticking up for her kids. And it was wrong. And to see these kids acting this way that call themselves Christians.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, that comes from directly from your parents. That comes from your parents teaching you a certain values. And that's one of the things he talks about in here. And he talks about, but here's the thing that I thought was interesting. He talks about, he talks about just the importance of dialogue between the races, mm-hmm. and how, you know, there've been a lot of studies that show that, you know, this, you know, the tolerance training and that kind of stuff is almost a waste of time. You know, you really have to create programs that have social interaction, that have dialogue, that have uncomfortable thing, and that where there's accountability for change and diversity. So, but he talks about these dialogues are made more difficult when they involve unequal status relationship of power and privilege between the participants. And here's something interesting. Or significant to me, hidden disparaging messages to people of color. And he's quoting this other author, and the other author terms racial microaggressions, you know, and the people who find them offensive, triggering intense emotional responses. And the thing is, you know, I've always been the kind of person who, you know, if you called me the N-word, you know, I'm not happy about it, but I don't have like this seething anger for it, because I don't identify that with that word. You know, I don't see myself as, you know, the N word or whatever. I have my own definition of what that is, you know, but it took me a long time to understand, not that I didn't know that it was, you know, derogatory and insult, but to understand that anger behind it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And what it's not so much the word, but what it represents. And what it represents is the culmination of your experience as a black person or a person of color, whether you're called a San N-word or you're called just an N-word, or, you know, all the derogatory words they have for people of color. So he talks about what this woman's research has identified as the four main fears that make race dialogues particularly threatening to whites. First, the fear of appearing racist. The U.S. Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights all teach us to cherish freedom, equality, and intrinsic worth of everyone. So there may be a great deal of shame in appearing otherwise. Two, fear of realizing your own racism. The most threatening realization of many white Americans is that they are indeed racist. White students and teachers are adverse to seeing how their beliefs and actions contribute to the oppression of others. Number three, fear of confronting white privilege. Difficult dialogue can force whites to consider the possibility they have benefited from racist arrangements and the practices of society. And number four, fear of taking personal responsibility to end racism. And this is the line that stands out to me, and I agree with this more than anything he says. The ultimate white privilege is the ability to acknowledge its existence and do nothing about it. And that's, to me, for me, the essence of white privilege is that, yeah, it exists, but you don't really have to acknowledge it. You don't really have to deal. You don't have to deal with it, so it doesn't really bother you. And that I've encountered that throughout my life. You know, even having a conversation with someone who's white, who's just uncomfortable having a conversation, you know, and I can remember being young, not wanting to make white people feel uncomfortable, and remember that, you know, looking back, that was important to me, because not so much that I wanted to be accepted, that I wanted to relate to people, and I didn't want to get that to get in the way. But I remember being very conscious of it. And I remember so much so that I was that black person that so many white people would, you know, talk to, like, I never had a black friend before. Oh my God, I don't see you as black. You're a white guy with a black head, a black body. You know, and to them that was a compliment to me, because they could never talk to a black person like they could talk to me. They didn't really consider me to be, you know, their view of black. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I know. I mean, what do you do when, like, you have a friend who you go out of your way for, and you know, he laughs at you when you tell him, like, look, you're smart and you're a talented individual, but you play into being the stereotype. I'm here for you. I'm here to help you. I'll do whatever I can, you know, whatever. But you gotta, like, doing stupid. I told him, like, get a tape recorder and listen how you talk to people. I said,
yeah, he talks about this in the article. What you're trying to do to your friend, he talks about in this article.
No, but the whole thing too is regardless of it. If you want to work, regardless of your ethnicity.
I understand where you're coming from. But I'm going to offer you a perspective on that.
But if you're trying to break into a corporate situation,
I agree with you.
You have to play the game just like a sport.
Absolutely. Joe, listen to me. I can't tell you how many interviews I went on when I was young, going on interviews, where I'd show up and they go, you're Mike Sargent? I thought you were taller, you know, because they really had no idea I was black just because of how I sound. I don't sound, quote unquote, in their mind of what they interpret a black person to be. So I know what you're saying. So here's the last thing I'm going to read from the article here. He says, beware the white industrial savior complex. Ironically, white allies in the struggle against racism tend to be particularly impatient and demanding. As a privileged group, we're used to getting results and find the pace of change with regard to racial injustice is excruciatingly slow. And I have to say, I know a number of really good intentioned white people who suffer from that. And it says here, nevertheless, we must resist the tendency coined by the author and activist Tehu Cole as the white savior industrial complex. As he wrote in his sentence of tweets in 2012, the white savior supports brutal policies in the morning, founds charities in the afternoon, and receives awards in the evening. The banality of evil transmutes into the banality of sentimentality. The world is nothing but a problem to be solved by enthusiasm. This world exists simply to satisfy the needs, including, importantly, the sentimental needs of white people and Oprah. The white savior industrial complex is not about justice. Oprah. Well, you know, he's obviously being slightly snide there. He says the white savior industrial complex is not about justice. It's about having a big emotional experience that validates privilege.
Look, I'm going to say this, and I've said this before. And yes. My father and my grandfather said there were only two kinds of people in this world. Mm. People who wanted to work hard to get ahead.
The grays and the blues?
The grays and those who just, like, thought that they were going to feed off the system. And they went out of their way to get people into unions, regardless of their race, creed, or color, because they wanted to work, they wanted to get ahead, they wanted to get the house, they wanted to take care of their family. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter to them. It didn't matter, you know, how they talked or what they, you know, if they had a southern accent or if they spoke, you know, with a Spanish dialect. It was all about, you know, what their drive and what they wanted to do for their family. That's all that mattered. And they went to bat for them to get their head. And that's, you know me. I have friends, acquaintances, and I have family. And there are very few people that I talk about my extended family. It was funny because a friend of mine, Real Lamb, taught me the whole thing. He used to call me cousin. And I said, why do you call me cousin? He said, because I know you, and I know how good you are, and I know what you try to do, and your family. He said, so you're my cousin, kind of thing. And so that's what it is. My extended family. These are my extended cousins and uncles and stuff and whatnot, people that I know who are good, solid people, and that's the only difference. You know, I look at panhandlers on the street who are not really homeless people, and those are not, you know, my kind of people. They're playing a game. They're trying to get over. They're trying to work the system. But somebody who's trying hard, going to school, working, you know what? They deserve anything that I can do for them to help them along the way. You know, and we work together as a team. It's like a relay race. You know.
What do you think of the article? I'm going to read you the last part of what he says you can do. But any thoughts or any comments you want to make so far?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I totally get it. Read the last part.
I'm going to read the headlines of what he says. And he breaks down, he says, so he ends his article with, so what should well-intentioned whites do? And again, you know, like I said, these things can really transcend just this issue and just this thing. And I also want to mention that as I was reading this, I was reading this article on the way here on the train, you know, and I do have a lot of feelings, Joe, about what's going on. And I have really a lot of feelings about what's happening with the police and how easy and how these police can act with impunity. You know, and just, I have a lot of feelings about it. I can't not have feelings about it. And to quote, you know, the Hughes brothers, I interviewed them like for their first or their second film, I think. And I asked them about, you know, art and politics and should they have a message? And, you know, when you have people's attention, should you be saying something? And he said, you know, I believe it was Albert Hughes. He said, you know, he says, you have no choice. When you're black, you are political. You have no choice. And I never forgot that. And I thought he was very right. You know, he's a young kid, 22 years old or whatever. And he got it as an artist and as someone who has the ability to get people's attention. So, you know, I just have to say, Joe, for me, you know, seeing what's happening in the world right now, I'm not as optimistic as I would like to be.
And I think it's you know, you can't be, there's a lack of optimism on all fronts, from what we're doing to each other to what we're doing to the environment to what we're doing to women. It's just insipid.
I mean, none of it makes any sense.
That's all I can say.
Now,
as the government said.
Well, no. I forgot what I was going to say. What I was going to say is, as I was reading and I was feeling this, I was feeling like, wow, I'm not as optimistic as I want to be. I'm sitting on the train and I watch a Hasidic Jew get on the train, and he had like this kind of high tech, like, not a walker, but it was something, you know, that obviously helped him walk, but he had a lot of stuff on it. He had just been shopping, and, you know, it took me a minute to even realize what it was. Like, I was like, what is that, like a baby carriage? What is that? I didn't know what it was. And I watched him get on and kind of look around and see that he couldn't get a seat and kind of be disappointed. And I saw a black guy, just young black guy, just get up, gesture to him like, come sit down. And he took the seat. And I thought, yes, This is why I love New York. And, you know, don't give up hope on humanity.
No, and
you know, that's what I had to say.
Like, even tonight, on the way here, I saw someone get up and give a chair to an older person. I saw somebody else give a chair to an older woman. But then,
well, you know, I love that, but I have to say, unity between the races right now, mm-hmm. after reading this alert thing and knowing all these countries, I really feel, you know, yes, I want to see kindness. But I also want to see rationality. I want to see, you know, I remember feeling that I always wanted to bridge that gap. You know, I didn't want to assimilate, but I always enjoyed bridging that gap. I enjoyed being able to be, you know, as naive as I was, I enjoyed being that first black friend. I enjoyed being that guy who changed the mind of that person about who and what black people could be. You know, I did. I know it's...
I know, I totally understand that.
Youthful and...
But I don't, you know...
So, I saw that say that, you know, I am hopeful.
Tonight, when I was coming here on the bus, the bus driver was a female African-American, and this other guy who... gets on at this one stop, who drives for another bus company, gets on the bus. He doesn't have a Metro card, and he flashes his cash at the driver and says, "I don't have money. I don't have a Metro card. I don't have, but I got money. See, I got money. So, you know, you drive a bus, I drive a bus, I'm getting on the bus," kind of thing. And she says, "What are you doing?" kind of thing. And he's like, "Oh, just shut up." Kind of thing. That's why I don't want to work for the MTA, because all you people do is complain and stuff and whatnot. Well, I work harder than you, and I got less benefits than you, and you know what? I'm getting on the bus. So just shut up. Just shut up. And I'm thinking, really? Really? Not like you could have turned around and said, "Listen, I don't have a Metro card."
You didn't intervene like you did as a child?
Not, this guy was definitely not wrapped tight, and he wasn't being violent to the woman, so you know what?
He was being disrespectful.
Very disrespectful, and nobody was saying anything on the bus. And you know what? Nothing I could have done that would have changed this guy's mind, because he wanted to have an argument.
I'd have gotten up. I'd say, "Get off the bus. Take the next bus."
You're a little bit bigger than me. This guy was.
I would have
said,
"Take the next bus."
So
that's why I was saying.
All right,
Chris would have done the same thing. Chris would have gotten up with me. He'd have been like, "Yeah, take the next bus." He'd just stand behind.
Well, see,
me.
That's Chris.
He'd be the guy behind me. Going, "Yeah, okay. Take the next bus." Say what he said.
He's got you back.
Tell him, Mike.
Wearing his wearing his Incredibles jacket, Mr. Yeah. Incredible.
You know, Mike, when you were saying about looking at.
By the way, I'm going to the Intrepid Star Trek thing on Thursday. I'm going.
You going?
I'm going. Just so you know, I'm going. All right, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
You know, when you were saying that you were looking at the world not as optimistic as you once were, and then you kind of changed up and you were like, "Well, but I still have a lot of hope." And I get that. The thing is you brought a point up that I think is very important, where, you know, people have to become more conscious of their actions and what they're doing and the consequences in both realities, you know, coming from the cops and coming from, you know, people that are just getting pulled over, and how they have to treat the situation differently. And it shouldn't have to be that way. But unfortunately, we're living in a world now where, you know, people aren't making the right decisions. And as a result, people are getting killed. And someone should die because their tail light's out or anything.
Well, you know, I have to say, yeah, no, I agree with you, and I have to say, you know, to me,
and what's funny is, you know, I feel positive. You know, what's really interesting is it depends on where you are, is where the positiveness generates itself. Because most people just want to get along, but.
Yeah, but it's very different. It's very different about. It's. I got to tell you, Chris. I you know, I don't want to make you sound like anything, but you know, it's very easy to say that when you're white. You know that I just everybody just wants to get along. You know, it's a different kind of struggle. I'm just saying.
Listen, if anybody understands it, I understand it quite well, man. I've lived it enough to know, you know, without being black, I'm not saying that, but I'm well aware of the reality of life. So, you know, and I understand that. I'm just looking. I'm talking about.
I just think it's going to take hundreds of years before, if at all, we have the opportunity to time.
It's not going
to
take hundreds of years. It's going to take a couple of decades.
It's going to take an extraterrestrial, something that would bond people as humans. And until people can bond as humans, we're always going to have some type of racism. So unless we bond as a human race on a whole, it ain't ever going to happen. And I don't care, you know, it ain't going to happen. Not in our lifetime, not in 100 years.
But even that, Chris, I mean, you look at things that are going on in the African continent now, like in Sudan and other places, where it's going back to that tribal sense.
That's what I'm saying. That's you know, a couple of things are at work here. Like I said, human beings are very tribal.
Yeah, even in the Middle East.
Everywhere. It's a human thing. A human thing. People are tribal. And, you know, he cites a bunch of things in his article, too, about, you know, the studies that show that, you know, people tend to want to side with those who are like them. You know, that's he said, you know, the phrase he uses is hardwired, but that's an instinct we have to overcome in order to progress, in order to advance, in order to evolve, you know, and
I guess the only way you overcome that is through, you know, people
awareness,
people, you know, getting married into different races and eventually everybody getting, feeling part of each other's culture, I guess.
Well, you see, right? It's interesting to say that because what you're really saying is the core is embracing, you know, all of it, embracing humanity as just that, as humanity, that, you know, we're all human.
Well, see, that was the whole, you know, if in the end run we find out,
except for Joe,
that we are all part of each other, like, you know, whenever it all comes down to the truth of what all is that, wow, we each one of us, ourselves are all part of each other. We're all part of the same thing.
Well,
we come to that point where we realize that we really are all part, you know, we're all breathing the same air. We're all part of the same molecules that make up humanity, and we all are each other.
Chris, I don't breathe the air. I breathe the air you breathe.
Look, if we can't even realize that our actions on the environment have consequences for the future, and there are people out there, even though they have money and they have kids, at some point, look what happened with the school systems and the lead and all that stuff that affected a broad variety of people of different ethnic and monetary backgrounds, because the people at the top, the 1%, were making, you know, shortcuts and stuff like that. They don't, it's the consequences, it's the greed. It's if people don't do anything for the benefit of society at large, there are just too few people that do that. And if you do a job and you approach it from the point of view of it's the best job that you can do, you know, in trying to serve the community, and you approach it differently, then there are, you know, it's a different mindset than the monetary capitalistic mindset that drives everything these days.
Joe Masseri. We are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI and 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. The name of the show is Night Shift. I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with Joe Masseri. Chris Taylor's on the phone. You can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. We've got shows going back for over 10 years. And you can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. Or you can follow us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. And Joe Masseri, you've got some kind of magazine thing that you do there. What do you do, Joe?
I just, in fact, fearsmag.com, we just signed up for Instagram and Pinterest.
Really? So this is going to be a what's the
same thing? Fierce Mag. You look on Fierce Pinterest. Mag. You look on Instagram.
Fierce Mag.
Yeah.
What about Joe Mag?
Joe Mag doesn't exist. World of Fandom Mag is about to relaunch. World of Fandom is about to relaunch.
Are you involved with that?
That's the magazine I co-owned with Al Chevy, who passed away several years
ago. So you're relaunching on your own?
Relaunching it, reposting the old issues and stuff. And so,
why don't you bring me and Chris in on it?
I don't know. What are your qualifications?
I am qualified.
We are qualified.
We are qualified.
Bring the ship closer, Joe. So I may bomb.
So you may assimilate.
Joe Masiri.
Yes.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yes. Once I got over my train situation, I enjoyed myself.
All right. Well, I do want to give you the five things he says you should do if you want to. If
yes.
What well-intentioned white people should do. Okay. Here's what it is. And I'll just give you the headlines. One, talk to your kids.
True.
Two, pay attention to your language when speaking about race and how the media you choose to consume represents race. And this is the line, and I have to read this because I feel strongly about this one. He says, these processes of meaning construction quietly fortify our bias. And that is a very, very significant thing. That is something that this is the culture we live in, that we're able to fortify our bias by everything we read, by joining groups, by joining, getting alerts, by joining, reading this website, choosing to read this news, this kind of coverage. You know, you just fortify your bias. So, and he says, these processes of meaning construction quietly fortify our bias and racial supremacy and that of those around us. And then he says, confront racial injustice wherever you see it happening. So don't stand by. He says, if you look for it, you'll see it happening because it's everywhere and in big and small doses. Then he says, work among white people to generate more allies.
That's why you invite me and Christian.
That's right. He says, rather than imposing your well-meaning will on communities of color, work to broaden your coalition of white allies. And again, he's a white man writing from his white perspective. He says, build social movements among whites to dismantle white supremacy. Then he says, get up and protest. And he says, you know, it's very easy to sit back and say, oh, this is wrong. And then finally, support local initiatives in communities of color initiated by, for, and with members of these communities. And he says, research has shown that these types of locally informed bottom-up initiatives are far more effective and sustainable at addressing ills and do much less harm. So there it is. Joe Masiri.
Yes.
You are white. You are white. I am black. I am black. You are white. Chris, you are white.
Technically, I have.
You know,
I have.
You are white, Chris. I am black.
Technically, I have a lot of Northern African DNA.
You have? Is that because you're a Sicilian?
Yeah.
Ah.
Here's what the question should be on the list: how many black friends do you have?
I'm the intermediary.
Now, is it's that me, if you, if you're black and white, or just?
But it's the truth. You know, unless people can really say, hey, man, I got 30, 40, 50 black friends.
Yeah,
30, 40,
no,
50. How many people have 30, 40, 50 friends?
You can't. Period. That sounds like something that's played. Oh, wow.
I have. I'm a white guy, and I'm not a racist. I have 30, 40, 50 black friends.
You can't take it like that. I don't mean it in those terms. I'm just putting it out there.
You can't say it without sounding that way there. But
I like the fact that I have a very diverse ethnic group of friends.
Yeah, how many Hawaiian friends do you have, Joe?
One.
You got one Hawaiian friend?
Yes.
Who?
His name is Joel.
Don't lie.
No, it's not. He lives out on Long Island. New Hyde Park. You married
how many Hakawi friends do you have?
I don't know, but I know two Native American Indians.
You don't know any Hakawis?
I never asked them what tribe they
were. You never watched F Troop?
I did watch
all right.
F Troop.
So.
Tribe, get all the boys.
All right, well, you're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift, and we're here every week from midnight till 3 a.m. here on Listener Sponsored Radio.
Bring on.
Night Shift.